Hello and welcome to the Pit Imps Podcast, episode number 81, brought to you by the Brainstorm Brewery. I am your host, Angelo, back with you this week with Ryan.
What up, what up?
And this is a special episode for us, bro.
Why is that?
It's Pro Tour, man.
It is. It is Pro Tour.
I fucking love me some Pro Tour. There's just no way around it, man.
I do want to apologize in advance for any, like, fucking, I don't know, any sound quality issues, anything like that. How do I sound right now?
Like a dog run over your asshole.
Really? Is it bad?
Well, I mean, you talking makes it bad, but, you know, the actual quality is okay.
Skype and the fascists over at Microsoft decide that if you don't have the latest version of Skype, you cannot use it. And in order to download the latest version of Skype, I need to, an entire software update on my computer, so I'm going to have to start doing that, like, right away.
Yeah, amazingly, I did not have to because I have a PC, not a Mac. Yay. So, here's the way Pro Tours work for anybody whose, you know, head is fucking under a rock or something. They start the day, you're going to play 8 rounds on the day. Your first 3 rounds is always going to be a draft. Your second five rounds is going to be the said format. This format for Pro Tour Magic 2015 was standard.
Yay.
What the hell are you doing?
Not sitting here. Why? What's up?
The noises coming from your end.
Really?
It sounded like he was crumpling paper.
Oh, I just folded a piece of paper in half. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wow, this mic is better than I thought then.
Yeah, I heard every bit of that. I'm like, Jesus Christ. It's just like... Oh, well. But the nice thing about the drafts is they do show two drafts. They show one live and they show one while they're building. And let's just jump right into day one's drafts. They put the cameras on Ben Stark because, well, who better to put cameras on than Ben Stark when they're drafting,
Ben Stark.
Right?
Yeah.
So he gets a, excuse me, he gets a pack one, pick one of triplicate spirits, which, I mean, okay. He's Ben Stark, so it's kind of hard to argue this, but he passed the dragon, which, okay, that's an expensive card. I can understand passing that, you know. But
so which dragon? The siege dragon?
Yes.
Okay, which is fucking insane. I hear it all the time. Oh, it's 7 mana. Oh my god, it's 7 mana. The card is fucking nuts. If you swing with it once, I'm telling you, you're gonna wipe the majority of boards sitting across from you.
Well, he took a triplicate spirit, which was a 6, and the difference between 6 and 7 is big. It really is. I mean, like, a 6 drop, you're expecting to drop on, like, turn 8. A 7 drop, you're reasonably expecting to drop on, like, turn 10.
I don't know if I'm picking triplicate, pick one. A situational card.
Triplicate's just good, dude.
It is great. It's great if you have a board presence and could convoke it.
Right. On top of that dragon, there was also a Cone of Flame in the pack, and that would have been my pick. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, yeah. Cone of Flame is very, very good.
So he takes the triplicate spirits. Pack one, pick two, he goes with Nimbus of the Isles. Then he takes a Midnight Guard, then an Oresco Swift Claw. But he took that over an Encrust when he was already, like, leaning towards blue. And I'm like, is that right?
Apparently not, because he went 1 and 2 in the first draft, so.
I mean, I saw him pass a lot of Encrust, like he just didn't like the card or something.
Solid fucking removal.
Yeah, that's what I thought. He also took a Void Snare, and those were his first 5 picks for, pack one.
He takes a 1 mana, a sorcery in Void Snare over permanent removal, basically, in Encrust. I mean, Encrust is 3 mana, it's just a removal spell, it really is.
Blue, so it is double blue. His base color, he wanted to be white, and the double blue, he might have figured, okay, I'm not casting this till turn 5 or later.
But yeah, I bet they would have helped him out.
I think so too. So pack two, he cracks open, and there's a Sanctified Charge in there. And, if you're going to pick Triplicate Spirits, you're going to pick a Sanctified Charge. You just are.
A card that I've overlooked quite a bit.
Oh, dude, Sanctified Charge, good. It's the set's overrun.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know. I guess I was wrong, and I just looked at it as a 5 mana combat trick, which was just entirely too expensive for me, but it is good.
It is. He took a Willforge Golem with a second pick of pack 2. Third pick of pack 2, raise the alarm. So, you know, he's definitely going for that.
Convoke.
That convoke thing. Then he pick 4s a Titanic Growth. And I'm going, okay. That seemed like an odd pick. Then pick 5, he takes Oppressive Rays. Okay. So pack 3 comes around. Those are his first 5 picks of the first 2 packs. Pack 3 comes around, he first picks a Juggernaut. Okay?
Then, I like that card.
I do too. And then Pack 3, Pick 2, he picks a Juggernaut over Soul of New Phyrexia. Now, I love Ben Stark. I think Ben Stark's one of the best drafters out there today. But how the fuck you figure a Juggernaut is better than a Soul of New Phyrexia?
Well, it comes down two turns earlier.
Okay. I'm going to say this again. That's a Soul of New Phyrexia?
It is. Yeah, that's not a pick I'd have made. But, I mean, shit, the Juggernaut's good. And like we were talking about before the cast, 3 is really big. 5 is, I think, why you want this. I mean, 5 kills 4, which is what I was talking about before the cast. I think 4 is kind of the magic number of toughness in this set, as far as, like, that's the number that no one can seem to get through. So yeah, the 5-3 is fucking just huge. It does come to, it drops pretty early. I mean, it is a 4 drop. I don't know. I mean, did he need the soul? I mean, it's a really fucking good card, but.
I thought that he would have done a lot better with the soul, especially because he already had a Juggernaut.
Again, he went 1 and 2 in this first draft, so.
Yeah, and then his third pick, he took Colonian Twin Grove. So blue is gone. It's completely out of the picture at this point. In earlier packs, he did pick up, at the end of pack 1, he picked up an Overwhelm.
Okay.
For his 6th pick, and that was kind of where he made his switch. The next pack, he got a 6th pick Reclamation Sage and a 7th pick Mass Calcify, which, you know, okay. All these white creatures, that's actually fairly decent.
I love me some Reclamation Sage. I'm actually looking forward to game day this Saturday just to get a full art Rec Sage for Megan's Pond deck.
Ooh, sweet. So yeah, I mean, and then he 4th picks the Grizzly Bear and 5th picks an Evolving Wilds. His rares were not great. He did crack a Siege Dragon, which, again, I said I'd take the Cone of Flame over. He also cracked...
Which you're probably right on that. Man, Cone of... Dude, that 3-for-1. That 3-for...
The only problem with Cone of Flame, and I've beaten people trying to use Cone of Flames by killing my own creature, because you have to, or, you know, not by killing my own creature, but because once it's on the stack as 3 targets, it's legal. But just, like, okay, this is a deck that has a bunch of Cone of Flames, I'm just not, you know, I'm gonna put something out. I had a kid target a hexproof creature, and it's like, well, yeah. that just fizzled your spell.
It doesn't sound, though, that this was the deck he wanted. I mean, he didn't get any, like, of the Pegasuses or anything.
His second rare was an Urborg. That's not what you're looking to crack.
No.
So I can see taking the Juggernaut over that. Yeah. I'm sorry, that pack he actually took a Sanctified Charge over it. Like, that's perfectly reasonable. And his last pack, what he took the Juggernaut over was Obelisk of Urd. Like, his rares were not good.
No, I've been unlucky with the double Obelisk of Urd pull myself before.
Yeah, so... That was his draft, and again, he went 1-2, did not have a good draft. But no. Sam Black was also at this table, and they filmed him. And he took a pack 1, pick 1, Stoke the Flames over a Hornet's Nest. I don't know if that's right. I really don't. I mean, how'd Sam Black end? Do you have any clue?
Sam Black, I don't know what I could find that for you in a second if you want to go ahead and talk about what he did. I could get that.
I mean, I truthfully, I probably would take a Hornet's Nest, but I'm silly like that. Pick 2, he goes Cone of Flame. Pick 3,
Hornet's Nest is ridiculous, but so is Stoke the Flame. I mean,
it is.
The fact that, I mean, if you get Stoke the Flame along with, like, Raise the Alarm and some of that other stuff, cheap creatures, it's pretty impressive.
It is. I've just seen, like, I don't know, in what I've been playing on M15 online, I've seen a lot of very, like, small creature quick strategies, and a single Hornet's Nest just shuts those down. It just puts the brakes on, and they're like, ah, fuck. And they just quit swinging.
Oh, yeah. The card is fucking nuts.
It just puts them in a bad spot. They don't want to waste, you know, directed removal at it. It's like, if you don't have flesh to dust, this thing doesn't die. Because nobody wants to run anything into it, and when you do run something into it, usually you're conceding that you're going to put yourself in a bad situation for a few turns.
Yeah, basically.
That you have to fight your way out of, so most players don't put themselves in that situation, but then they end up sitting there and sitting there and sitting there, and before you know it, the person with the Hornet's Nest has built up a board presence, and it goes, I don't care anymore about my Hornet's Nest. So I'm just going to swing with everything else, and this Hornet's Nest is nice. So pick 2, Cone of Flame. Pick 3, Heat Ray. Pick 4, Rotfeaster Maggot.
Very good. Dude, that's an overlooked card, man.
It is.
I don't think it gets the love. Rotfeaster is fucking nuts, dude.
I actually went back and looked at my first pre-release back, the one I went green black in. I actually had three of them in there and I didn't run any of them. I had other things that I wanted to do with that drop.
It's great. Well, yeah, it's really well suited for the more like mid-range to control-ish type, like,
and that's what I was playing.
Yeah, no, it's fucking nuts there because it kills all the little dudes. It really does. It gains you life, comes down, helps stabilize you.
Well, you got to remember in that draft, I also had three, Zathrid Skyblades and three of those, fuck, what are those things called?
Dude, Rotfeaster's better than Slyblade.
And I had three of the spiders as well, so that was my control aspects. Like, once I got the five drops, like, I didn't want to do control anymore. Like, that was my beatdowns, my five, six, and sevens. So, that's why I went against it. But, I mean, I might have been wrong now that I look back and see how the numbers that this card's actually putting up. And pick five, he goes Divination. So, nobody knows at this point any clue where he's at except Red, because he went Stoke of Flames, Cone of Flame, and Heat Ray. Like, you're running Red.
Yeah.
So, pack two, pick one, he goes Borderland Marauder, which, that's a fine fucking card.
For sure.
Pick two, Karinko's Enforcer. Sure. Pick three, Covenant of Blood. Pick four of the pack two, Hammerhand. Pick five, Shadow Cloak of Vampire. So, he looks like he's Red-Black for sure. Back three, pick one, Burning Anger.
Hmm.
Yeah, dude, that's that enchantment that just deals direct damage.
Yeah, that's the rare, right?
Yeah,
equal to creature's power. That card's fucking nuts.
Yeah, that card is stupid. Pack three, pick two, Krenko's Enforcer. Pick three, guess who got the Soul of New Phyrexia?
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't let it go.
No.
Pick four, Crowd's Favor. Pick five, Glacier Chasm.
I wonder what he was like when he got that in pack three. He's like, what the hell? Who dropped this soul?
Yeah, he's just like looking over at Ben like, really? Okay.
Thank you, Ben.
I appreciate it, dude. So, I mean, that was the featured.
Yeah, he went 1-2 also in draft. Sam Black looks like he earned himself a total of 6 points the entire time. He 0-3'd the second draft and only went 1-2 the first one. And, did just atrocious, won one match and went 1-9 in the standard portion.
Okay.
With a deck I thought was really sweet, by the way. I don't know if we'll talk about later, but it's Zvi Mauschwitz did a deck tech on.
Pretty sweet. So day one, was there anything that happened in day one that like stood out to you, sir? That's like really worth, you know, putting some time into as far as play goes.
I mean, not that I can recall or remember, nothing like in particular.
Well, how about the number one player in the world getting bounced out?
Oh, yeah. Reed Duke.
Does not make day two.
Yeah, unfortunately for Dookie. So, very close. I mean, he fought for day two. He made a fight.
Yeah, but 3-5.
Yeah.
Not exactly what I thought I'd see. There was a player named Orange.
Yeah, Greg Orange, Citrus Assassin.
It was his second ever Pro Tour, and he started the day, I want to say, 6-0?
Yeah, he was like 9-2 at one point.
Yeah,
When we get to the top eight, we'll talk about first Pro Tours.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
But you know,
that was impressive.
I mean, it was cool to watch the draft and stuff. I wish I could have – I missed round 7, Finkel Datura. That would have been cool to see.
Passed out due to, drugs, which I'll explain later.
Okay.
But yeah, I kind of passed out, shortly after the whole draft portion and missed like most of standard. The big news though, coming out of day one, man, was they did go ahead and announce who actually made the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, pretty sweet.
I can't argue with any of these choices. And there was a lot of people like on Twitter, you know, you see the my ballot this, my ballot that thing, and you're like that dude doesn't deserve to be in. I kept seeing, you know, cheaters on there and everything else, and just like, ah. But our three players, only three got in this time, is Makihito Mahara. Just go back and like look this dude up. I mean, he's so good. He deserves to be in, clearly. Paul Rietzel.
Yeah.
And a man who should have went in 2 years ago, but he got suspended.
Yeah.
Guillaume Wafatapa.
Yeah.
I mean, like, legitimately, he should have went in 2 years ago. He basically was in. Like, he had the votes and everything, but because he received that silly suspension, because Guillaume Wafatapa and Guillaume Matignon accidentally kind of told everybody what cards were in the upcoming set really early, it kind of got them suspended for a while, so he got taken off of the ballot. Because you cannot go into the Hall of Fame when you are serving a suspension from the DCI.
Yeah.
Makes perfectly good sense, but I mean, like, Wafo, he's been credited with so many decks over the year. He is the control player. Just flat out plain and simple, the control player. Man, three players, all deserving. Congratulations to all of them. Okay, so that's what they said before we got into Standard. Was the Hall of Fame, you know, during that little lunch break.
Yeah, and fucking, dude, I'm so glad Reedsel got voted in. I think he was the overwhelming favorite here.
I don't know. I think Wafatapa was probably the overwhelming
favorite. Yeah, I mean, but the most votes, I think like three quarters of them went.
No, I thought that was Wakahito.
No, I think Paul Reedsel was like far and away. Had like the most, like 3/4 of the people that could vote voted for him or something.
Let me see.
Yeah, either way, man, congrats to all of them.
The leading vote-getter on this year's ballot was Japan's Makihito Mahara.
Huh, okay. Well, yeah, either way, congratulations to all of them. That's fucking sick, so. Yep. Pro Tools for life. Can't go wrong.
So we move into the standard portion of day one.
Yay.
And there was a lot of interesting decks there, a lot of decks that we're used to seeing. Yep. A couple very strange decks. Thank you, Conley. Which didn't do real well, but you know.
Yeah. And some weird math by Watsy. Thank you for fucking up the math here. You have they have 61 for black based devotion decks, and then down in their percentages they say that there were 78 black based devotion decks. So,
well,
I don't know.
The base black so you add, wait.
Yeah, that's 61. Their math
that
is
should be
off.
61, but the total's right, 78. When you add, no, that's not even
no.
Right either.
What? The total would be 61 if you add that column up, which is the number they have at the top is total representation. So the 78 is wrong.
Okay, but is it still 21.7%?
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't really matter. Base mono black devotion, just straight mono black, was far and away the most represented deck they won.
Go figure.
Yeah, at, I mean, 13.6% of the field, straight mono black. The other black devotion decks, like Splashing White and Green, are very negligible. We're talking like 0.8% of the field, 0.3% of the field, 2% of the field, the Splash Green. So negligible there. Definitely mono black devotion was king of the hill, though. White-black mid-range was the second most represented deck with 39 total in the field. Mm-hmm. That is several of Channel Fireball's deck of choice, so no big surprise there. A lot of people were on it. We heard several pros. Surprisingly, this surprised me. I don't know if you'll agree, but several of them were saying that this format kind of converged on Blood Baron of Iskoba, and that was like the card.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily the format, but this tournament, I can kind of agree with it when you just said that Black Devotion was the number one that showed up. I mean, if that's the case, then yeah, you want Blood Barons.
Yeah, I mean, Zvi Mautsiewicz was like saying it was, he thought was like the most powerful card in the tournament, was the Blood Baron. And I don't know, I guess if you don't run into a bunch of monsters decks and stuff, and if you're expecting mono black, if you could stick the Blood Baron, it's pretty fucking good. So,
I mean, it's good against, it's good in the mirror, and it's good against mono black. And these are the two decks that showed up the most.
Yeah. It's also good against control.
There's 100 decks here. You know what I mean? That showed up with that out of what, 2-something?
Yeah, so white-black mid-range, of course. Then mono-blue was the third most represented, 32 decks in the field. No surprise there. Mm-hmm. The next deck surprises me, though. In fourth place, Esper, 31 Esper decks.
Really, I mean, I don't know if I find that shocking, because, I mean, going over SCG's weekly, it seems like there's always a fair amount of Esper decks. If there's a control deck in the top eight, it's usually, you know, it turns out to typically be Esper. So I don't know that it was that crazy, but
yeah.
That's... And pro players, let's face facts, they love them some control.
Yeah. Burn in the fifth most played deck on day one, Burn at 24, 6% of the field roughly. Pretty fucking sweet.
Yeah. There was a spicy build. I don't know if that actually fit into it or not.
I thought most of the burn builds. No. You're talking about Rabble Red.
I'm talking about the Young Peasy deck.
Oh, that's the burn deck that's been around forever. Yeah. People have either gone burn with Eidolon or Pyromancer. Pyromancer's been more like the Asian tech, whereas you've seen the Eidolon here in the States more.
Yeah.
I like the Eidolon, man. I like the Eidolon myself. I played burn for several weeks. I tested both versions. Eidolon, I mean, most of the time the Pyromancer just ate a removal spell, and at least with the Eidolon, they're taking 2 damage to kill it. So.
Yeah, and it's really bad when they steal your Young Pyromancer, I'm just saying.
Yeah, which we saw.
We got to see that. We'll go over that later.
It's fucking awesome. Sixth place deck, Blue-White Control, 23. Not on the list, though, of the top six, but super fucking cool that it made the top 10, though, was, green, mono green devotion, man. 18 people showed up rocking Hornet Queens.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I thought that was pretty cool. The, Jund Planeswalkers, 10 people showed up with that. That was obviously a good choice. 2 of them obviously had a good time this weekend. Okay.
Jund Monster at 17 and White Green Aggro at 16.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this Rabble Red deck, 9 people showed up with. That was LSV's deck.
Yeah.
Of the tournament. Interesting. I don't know.
Here's the thing that fucks me up. 3 people showed up with Slivers.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? One person had the balls to show up with Maze's End, and they were a pro. I think Gabriel Nassif or Wafo? One of them.
Was it Nassif? I don't think. I know who you're talking about. I saw him play in it, and it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
I can't think of the name.
It was pretty fucking cool. I think it was Nassif, the guy, old school Nassif? French guy.
Yeah, it might have been Nassif. I know it wasn't Guillaume, but it might have been Nassif.
Fucking, funny as hell though, one Maze's Index in the room. Yeah.
Black Green Stockpile. That was Conley's brew. They did a deck tech on it. It's not very good.
No.
Just letting you know that now.
And I could pull up your results here because you, you drafted one Conley Woods in our fantasy, poll. And let's see, Woods went all of.
What, like 3-7?
3-7.
Yeah. Standard. So this is not a good deck. Exactly.
So that was day one though. No one is surprised, which is very, man, I was hoping one of these teams would come up with, it seemed like Channel Fireball and those guys just fell back on a safe deck in Black White Mid, which has a really good game against control and a really good, 50-50, if not, 60-40 matchup against Mono Black. I've been saying on the show for the past couple weeks, everyone knows I play white black mid. I've decided to add the white splash months ago, a long time ago. Been saying that's the way to go. I think they proved that this weekend. It just, it has good game against the rest of the field, which can't be said against, the other decks. So I was kind of disappointed though to see these were our decks that these teams came up with. I was kind of expecting a surprise like we got in Theros with Mono Blue, coming on the scene real hard. I was rooting for this Rabble Red. It just didn't have enough representation. I don't think enough people got behind it, but.
Well, the problem with the M sets really shaking it up too much is there's already 7 sets in the format. So for one set to shake it up too much is really hard. I mean, we did see a lot of new cards being played.
Yeah, but not being built around.
But it's not really built around yet. Yeah. So when Cons comes in and there's four sets plus Cons, I think that's when we're going to see a real, real shake up. Well, obviously, because everything good's leaving.
But, no more Sphinxes, Rev. I'm really, really, now that you bring that up, I'm very worried about the future state of control in Standard going forward. I'm really not looking forward, to be honest, if we could talk about Cons for a second, not looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a fail.
See, I don't want to mark something off as a fail and get my hopes all in the dumps before ever seeing a single card for it.
Yeah. I'm a nihilist, so I'll say it's a fail before I see any cards.
Plus, I want to see what junk cards I get. You know,
you mean Abzan?
Yeah, fuck that. What three color junk decks I get, you know, cards that I get, you know, and if I get something good, then I might be very happy with the set.
Right now, junk isn't control. I worry about my guys that want to rock the blue. I worry about those guys. I'm really worried about that. Are they going to get Steam Augury to replace Sphinx's Rev? I don't fucking think so. Are we going to see, what's that?
It might just happen because what's
the six mana draw for? Opportunity or something?
That's rotated out.
No, opportunities in Theros or whatever, right?
No, it's an M14.
Okay, so they don't even...
They have Jace's Ingenuity. That's what they got for drawing cards.
Yeah,
and that's Divination. Right. Divination is in Theros, so...
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm worried about it. I'm worried... I'm worried for my blue mages. Yeah, shout out to you guys, but yeah.
You never know. They might have a... what I'm going to refer kindly to as a fixed Sphinx's Revelation and cons.
Well, they... And two,
and
they
all you gotta
pushing...
do to fix it is just say exact same card, but make it a sorcery. Or exact same card, even as an instant, but take the life gain off.
Sure. But what... Yeah, but that sucks, dude, because it's that life gain that gives you time to cast what you draw.
It is. We could get good counters, too. We don't
here's
know what's
the thing.
Gonna get in a set.
I think what they're pushing and where they're trying to go and what we're seeing is laid on... I think they're trying to get Sphinx's Rev on creatures like Niv-Megis, Draco Genius, and then there was the Mercurial Pretender guy or whatever, and then we got the new Soul of Ravnica. I think they're trying to push this creature-based bullshit, so who knows?
Yeah, sometimes you just want a spell. Like, I get it that, you know, usually tacking a spell onto a creature is better. But sometimes you just want the spell.
Yeah. Sorry, we got a little off topic there. My bad.
All right. Well, day two, it started out with a draft as well. And, they sat down behind William Huey Jensen and they had Owen as the alternate. So when they were building, you know, we got to watch Owen's draft. Huey's draft. No, I have to preface even going over this draft with Huey believes the best color in M15, and his team believe this as well, was white. Flat out, plain and simple. And Huey was not going to draft anything but white. So, he pack one, picks one, a Geist of the Moors.
God, that card is good.
It is. 3-1 flyer, it is good. Is it a pick one? I don't know.
What else was in his pack, do you recall?
I do not recall, unfortunately. Okay. I do remember there was some... That looking at the pick, I'm going, huh?
Well, he was my number one pick in our draft, and he went 3-0 in this. He went 6-0 draft total, but he 3-0'd this one, yeah.
And this was amazing. You know what he passed? He passed a Cone of Flame. I do remember that now because his Cone of Flame ended up with a guy who ended up with 3 fucking Cone of Flames.
Wow.
His second pick was a Sungrace Pegasus.
Good.
Third pick, Selfless Cathar.
Yeah.
Fourth pick, that... Resko Swiftclaw.
Good.
Fifth pick, Marked by Honor.
Okay.
That's not too bad. +2/+2 and Vigilance.
No, it's got a cool picture of an elephant on it.
Yeah. So pack two, pick one, he finally dips his toe into another color. And this pack was bad. He took a Gravedigger.
Which is a respectable card.
Absolutely is. I mean, like, out of that pack, that was the right pick. Pick two, he went Preeminent Captain.
Nice.
Yeah, that's just fine.
I don't know how many soldiers he's got to combo with it.
I mean, you got like Midnight Guards and things like that.
It is. The thing is, it's a first strike, and a 2-power first striker kills a lot of dudes.
Yeah, especially because there's the Kinsbale Skirmisher, which can give it +1/+1, and it is, in fact, a soldier.
Ah, there you go.
Yep. Pick three, another Geist of the Moors. That's where I want Geist. Pick four, Pillar of Light. Pick five, Midnight Guard. And then pick six, he gets rewarded for saying, fuck you people, I'm taking all the white cards. And he gets a Mass Calcify.
It doesn't sound like they were taking all the white cards. There was a pick five pillar.
Pick four pillar, pick five Midnight Guard.
Or pick four pillar.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't know. Pillars, So then we move into pick pack three, and he opens a Soul of New Phyrexia. He does not pass the Soul of New Phyrexia.
No.
He takes it. Pick
could you imagine if that got passed twice on camera? Fucking
oh, my God. pick two, he goes Sanctified Charge. Pick three, he goes into the color that he ends up in. Finally, Welkin Tern. Pick four, nice. Into the Void. And pick five, Warden of Beyond, which goes well with said Pillar of Light from earlier. He pushed Mono White as much as he possibly could. And at the end of his draft, I thought he had a pile. But Huey Jensen is a hell of a player, and he took this pile to winning the Table 1 pod. So, yeah, take that with a grain of salt. While they were building, again, they went over Owen's deck, and Owen, pack one, pick one, Quickling. Pick two, Divination over Encrust. What is it with these pros not liking Encrust? Okay. Calm down. All right.
Divination says draw a card. So
it does, but Encrust says stop a creature. Pick three, Into the Void. Fine pick. Pick four, Gravedigger. Pick five, Flesh to Dust. At this point, he is going black-blue, and yeah. Pack two, he gets a Covenant of Blood, then a Stab Wound, then a Jace's Ingenuity, then a Shadowcloak Vampire, and a Research Assistance Fifth. By the end of pack two, he was clearly base black with blue. Like, his creatures were pretty much all black and, you know, short of the Quickling. And he was clearly using blue as his secondary color. And this deck really comes together on pack three when he opens an Obnixilus. And he's just like, okay, slam. And then he gets a Typhoid Rats, which he actually needed at that point. He did not have a lot of early drops, and, like, that was perfect for him. Then he gets a Rot Feaster. Then he gets a Necrogen Scutter. That was another perfect early pick for him. And then he got a Necromancer's Assistant. So he got both of the assistants, a blue one. He got a black one. He got an Obnixilus. He got a Quickling. His deck was good. I feel bad. Do you have results on him by chance?
On who?
On Owen for his second draft.
Oh, Turtenwald went, he didn't do so hot in the second draft. He went 1-2.
Okay, I actually liked Owen's deck better too, so that says something. Oh man. So there's that. Anything happened during day two during the play of the draft, the standard portion that really jumped out at you?
I mean, just some of the coverage, some of the people on coverage. I mean, the level of play at day two Pro Tour was exceptional.
Of course.
A lot of fun to watch. Ivan Flock was amazing to watch on camera. John Finkel was fucking,
it's always near, good to watch Finkel.
He was at the top tables all day. Like I would have to say the best match. Was this day one? Was it Bob Maher Finkel day one or two?
I'm not really sure.
That must have been Saturday. I think it was, they started, yeah, it was the first.
Standard match?
No, it was the first draft match they showed.
Oh man, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Again, drugs all weekend. Gotta explain that.
yeah, Bob Maher, John Finkel, watching those two was fucking awesome.
Yeah, that, I mean.
A lot of sick matches on camera.
I saw a tweet, which was funny, that it was like, you know, it was kind of a play on words and a joke, and it's like, ah, damn it, I'm at the Pro Tour, I lost to Bob. Wait, this isn't modern. No, I mean actually lost to Bob.
Yeah.
Because Bob Maher was kicking some ass.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I don't think
it matters because he's a Hall of Famer, of course, but God damn it.
Pretty good though on, pretty good on Bob. That was cool. So just watching just these big name players, the coverage was, I wish they would get rid of Zach Hill. He's fucking awful. And I wish they would, Marshall is really bad at Pro Tour coverage. I just wish they would get rid of those guys. Like,
see, I don't think Marshall's that bad at the
Okay, at Limited, his
I think he's
coverage
really
is good.
Good for the first three rounds.
Yeah.
And then after that, I would have
make him shut the fuck up when they do standard. Like, they just had no idea. They were just, so many times they would say something and then it was like, they had no idea what they were talking about. It was really, really embarrassing. So.
It's not the fact that, like, I mean, he, I don't know. I think he's really good for the first three rounds, and it's not that he's absolutely terrible with standard, but the thing is, they have better people that could take that spot as the host during.
Just pay LSV the fucking money to do the coverage. LSV's in the booth?
Yes, but LSV wants to play.
That's a shame. I bet if they threw enough money his way, he would change his mind, but.
Yeah, but right now he wants to play. I mean, I'm sure they've offered him this same contract that they gave,
I mean, his, the way that he does coverage, the way some of the, I mean, how they break stuff down, what's going through the players' minds, et cetera, like, it's just on a whole nother level. Zach Hill and Marshall, it's like amateur hour. Get Ben Stark in there like they did the last pro tour. Like,
again, you're talking about getting players in, dude. These players want to play during the pro tour. They can earn a lot of money.
Okay, that's fair, but I'm still convinced they could come up with some better broadcasters than these guys. Like,
I don't know. I think, I mean, really, as far as the whole broadcasting team goes, I think they have a solid broadcasting team. I think they just need to move certain broadcasters in certain places. Like Rich Hagon, he doesn't step into the host chair until the top eight. You can move him off of the news desk and put him in the host chair, you know, a few times throughout the tournament, especially.
I like Hagon. I love Hagon. A lot of people hate on him.
You also, I mean, I do like having Marshall in there during the limited, but you know, hands down, I think he does a great job at the limited portion. Yeah. After that, you can switch him with Hagon at the news desk.
And then well, Zach Hill. I don't know if I want Richard Hagon giving me my standard.
But the thing is, Rich Hagon says what's going on, and then he goes to the color man. He doesn't usually add too much. Aside from his puns, too much, you know, well, this player, I mean, he could be trying to think of this line and that line. He lets the color man do that. If you actually get, like, listen to him pretty well, that's kind of what he does. And that's what he should be doing. Like, you know, that's why the color man is there. And you have a pretty good set of color men. You have BDM, you know, he's a games historian. He is the games historian.
Yeah.
When you just need a change of pace, you have Rashad, and he's a fine change of pace. I personally believe Zach Hill should be left at the board to do interviews. Cause I like when he does those.
No, he shouldn't. He's terrible.
I actually like those. When
he's awkward. He's just awkward in interviews. He's very awkward. He says the wrong things. Like he's a bumbling fool. Like get rid of Zach Hill. Just get rid of him. He had his job. He did R&D.
We disagree on this. There's
just cause he did R&D doesn't mean he's meant to go and fuck in front of a camera. Like he's not. He's fucking awkward and weird.
I actually enjoy what he does when he's at the board. I don't like listening to him during the games.
He's weird and awkward, but.
Well, that's your opinion, and your opinion's wrong.
Okay.
That's an opinion based.
Anyways, though, we were talking and about drafting. How do we get off of this? How do we get on this stuff?
No, no, no. I'm going to finish this. And the last member of the group, Hall of Famer, fuck, why is his name slipping through my mind at the moment? There's a whole fucking deck named after him. It was blah, 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 blue. Anyway, he should just be the color commentator almost the whole fucking tournament because he's badass. And his name's escaping my mind. I feel like a moron. I'm sorry. Okay, so aside from that, during day two, I thought the coverage got stepped up again. I liked a lot more of what they did to kill time, you know, when they weren't actually playing. I mean, they're getting better at that. They really are. I mean, don't know if they're quite at Star Cities yet, because Star City, you know, they like to go to other games, but yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go with it. Also, other things that, okay, so they also have been moving fairly well and in the coverage. I like the coverage right now. It's not as bad as
it's much better than in the past. Like, it's not as, but I'm saying, like, there's clear room for improvement and fire the guy that works the slides during their presentations. Like, get rid of that fucker. Like, how hard is it? Yeah, no one wants to see the desktop on your computer during like Pro Tour coverage, like that's unprofessional. And none of these other networks, you would never see something like that, like watching sports or something on any other network or any other coverage team. You don't even see that amateurism like with SCG anymore. Like you did a year ago. You don't even see that shit. Like it's like during the Pro Tour, you're doing deck techs and like you got.
Yeah, they got two guys at the board and he's like, well, let's look at the next slide. And there's a 10-second lull before it finally changes over and it's like, not this one.
Or, yeah, just fire that fucker. Just get rid of that motherfucker. Like, I don't know who he is, but fire his ass. Like, it's terrible.
Yeah, he's not doing well with that, and I will agree with you completely on that one. So we're on agreement.
Overall, though, the tension day two, though, for that top eight was, I think, the...
For Pat Cox to play the last round when he was clearly in the top eight. Like, yeah, that kind of tripped me out, but he needed to do that with that deck. He was like, I need to go first.
Sure, but he did it twice when he, even with a loss, he was guaranteed.
He was guaranteed top eight. He wasn't guaranteed.
No, he was, he was guaranteed first seed the second time he did it.
No, he
and
wasn't.
He still, and he, yeah, he was, and he no, still Ichikawa made him play it out.
They would have ended up tied, and Ichikawa could have. if
it wouldn't have happened. It was a dick move, and look, good thing the kid that made it anyways.
Yeah, so, I don't know if I'm going to call it a dick move just because, I mean.
It wasn't the first round. The first time that he could have shook hands, and got the draw and moved on. Yeah, that's fine. Whatever. But, the second, when they were like, when the second round, when he could have just shook for the draw and he, like, knowing that he was like, he was assured at that point. I don't think it was necessary, so.
Just because it wasn't necessary doesn't mean that it's a complete dick move for somebody to say, I want to play Magic.
Yeah, sure. That's what you're at the Pro Tour for. I just, like, I was like, I don't like the dream crushing.
It gives him the best shot, you know. Yes, after Ichikawa shook hands, which I don't even think he did. I thought he had to play it out.
Oh, he was worried about Sperling's burn deck in the top eight, which, let's be honest, Pat Cox, you're not kidding anybody. Your matchup against that deck is already great. Like, I found that excuse laughable. It's laughable. Nia Aggro has a fucking fantastic matchup against that deck. Like, you lay a couple of three power dudes down and they can't stop you. Like,
yeah, but he can, we'll get into the decks later. But Sperling can, that deck can actually just overwhelm you with men on board. That's where the issue is.
Sure.
Anyway, so aside from that, I mean, a lot of fine play down the stretch. We saw Gregory Orange, his dream kind of get crushed late. I mean, he was right in it. Ichikawa, this dude started out
0-2. He started 0-2.
I know he started 2-3 for sure. And then he rattled off 11 straight wins. That's
pretty impressive.
Sick.
Dude, pretty impressive.
At a Pro Tour to rattle off 11 straight wins, fuck you. That's impressive as hell, man.
It's his second Pro Tour top eight in four attempts.
Yep, and his second one in a row.
So
that is fairly impressive. We do have a draft metagame breakdown that we should probably head over to.
For day two?
Yeah, it's actually for both days, but I figure we can go over them both. So 3-0s. For the first draft, which is day one, the most 3-0s at the tables was white-green.
Okay? Well, base white was 60. Can we just say base white was 64% of all the 3-0s day one?
Yes.
It doesn't what you paired it with, whatever. And 64% of them were base white. That's pretty impressive.
What we do have to keep in mind with that, and I look, white probably is the best color. I'm not going to argue that. But we do have to keep in mind that the Channel Fireball teams came up with the idea that white is the best color. So that's actually a fair portion of the
team. That's opinion. I mean, I like red myself. I still think red is far and away the best color in this format, but.
Yeah, my favorite color in this format so far has been green. But
green's got some good stuff too. Play style. There's a lot that goes into, best is subjective.
Yeah.
So.
It's clearly not blue or black.
Yeah.
Let's just go there. It's not blue or black. It's one of those
not in draft. Black is much better in sealed.
It is. It's a little bit slower. It makes their big removal spell that costs five, which is way too expensive in draft, actually playable.
Yeah.
In sealed. So.
I mean, of all the, white based decks that went 3-0, white black was only like 12% of them. So.
Yeah. So, but in day one, we had, nine white greens go ahead and win their pod, but we also had seven white blacks, which was, came right behind it as the number one deck. And then white red, you're getting a little hint at where this is going.
Yeah.
White red was the third best 3-0, and it came in with six of them. So of the 42 pods, just there alone, we have 9-7-6. Oh, and by the way, white-blue had four of them, and the next closest one was blue-green with four of them. So, white, good. Okay, day two's drafts went as followed. White-green and white-blue both had five.
57% of 3-0s were base white, second draft.
And then we had a few different fours. One of them was white-red, one of them was blue-red, one of them was black-red. So those are our four winners. And then three red greens, which is my color combination of choice. And then both days it had exactly three pod winners. And then after that, you have a bunch of twos and ones. White black did not do nearly as well on day two. So, I mean, the one thing the numbers say is, and mind you, this is a Pro Tour, so there's only 250 players. So it is a smaller sample size. But the numbers say white's the best color, and red is second, and green is third.
Yeah.
That's what the numbers say from this sample. Fair. I'm not going to argue that any of those are better than any of the other ones, because playstyle does come into it a little bit, and like Ryan said, and I like green, damn it.
Yeah.
I think I'm wrong. The big news from day two was the GP schedule for next year came out, dude.
Yeah.
Tell me you're excited.
That is, I mean, yeah, it's fucking cool. Helim came out with that, so.
Our Pro Tours next year, we'll just go over these real fast. The first one will be in February, and that'll be Standard and Booster Draft, and that'll be in Washington, D.C., which, you know, that's kind of shitty. Have you ever been to Washington, D.C., Ryan?
No.
Okay, well, don't. unless you're going for the historical value and you can ignore all the bums, don't. Brussels will be the April Pro Tour, and that'll be Standard and Booster Draft. They're all Standard and Booster Draft.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, Brussels is sweet. Vancouver gets one. That's kind of kick-ass. And then Milwaukee gets one in October. Okay. the World Magic Cup will be in Barcelona, Spain, as well as the World Championships. Season one of the GP schedule. I might go to Baltimore Limited December 13th and 14th. Is there any of these on here, like Denver, that you're going to?
I don't know, dude. I haven't looked at this yet, really. I need to go over it. But, I mean, yeah, we should probably put it in the show notes or something if people want to check it out. It's a GP schedule. I'm not.
Well, I mean, I like to look at it and see which ones I might go to, because I noticed Standard in January, right after.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about Pittsburgh in November.
Yeah, we're at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, November 21st and 22nd, last GP of the calendar year.
Yeah, it's
because
November.
Because World Championships follow it. It's Modern, which sucks for me because I don't play Modern. But that's going to be, like, if you listen to this show, you need to get your ass to Pittsburgh. You have over a year to come up with travel arrangements.
Yeah, I'm already starting to think about planning it, too. It is shortly after my birthday, so...
Even
it's a possibility.
Ryan, you gotta let me know if you come. I know Slick's gonna be there, and I might have a few select guests over, Friday night. And I might, because it's the week before Thanksgiving, I might do a Thanksgiving dinner at my house with a few select guests.
Sweet.
So let me know, and you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few I've already like thought of. Denver in January. Like, if I go see some family out there on Christmas or something, I don't know. Columbus is close. There's some in Tennessee that aren't far off from me, so.
Holy fuck, Cleveland got one this year.
Yeah,
Cleveland never gets one. I'll go to that.
Indianapolis is one. Obviously, I'll be attending Indianapolis. It's, you know.
It's your backyard.
Yeah, it's pretty close, so.
Yeah, I'm thinking Baltimore, Cleveland. Because, dude, Cleveland's like an hour away.
I mean, yeah.
It's like 2 hours tops. I might do Indy. I might. I'll be into Standard fully by then, so maybe. I might go back to Providence just because I really like that city. I mean, I really like that city.
Yeah, and, nice place.
And I'm going to do Pittsburgh, and that's pretty much all I'm thinking I'm doing next year. But the whole list is up. You can go check it out. Figure out which ones you're going to. The only one that's mandatory is Pittsburgh.
Yes.
we know who our competitors for Worlds is going to be this year as well now.
Yeah, they also announced this at the Pro Tour. So
I'll go over the first eight players. You can go over the next eight players, and then we'll split the last ones. So first eight players that are going is going to be Jeremy Dazani, Pro Tour Theros winner. Sean McLaren, Pro Tour Born of the Gods winner. Pat Chapin, Pro Tour Journey into the Knicks. And Lars Dam, Magic 2013 Magic Online Championship winner. 2013 World Championship winner Shahar Shenhar, Ralph Levy, the Magic Cup winning team captain. Owen Turtenwald, top on pro points. Because, yeah, Dazani had to, because Dazani already had the Theros, he got the top points one, I guess.
Yeah.
And then, Reed Duke.
Yeah. So he also, Jeremy Dazani qualified like three times over, player of the year for Theros and top pro points. So there were two at large bids given out because of that.
If you want to go over the next eight and don't explain how the first guy got there.
Let's. Okay, Ivan Flock. We'll find out what he did later. Stanislav Sivka. Top pro points at large. This was an at large bid. He got the at large bid.
Okay.
Top pro points North America. I think they get two slots. So, Stanislaus Slifka got an at large, I think, from Dasani. Willie Adel, top pro points Latin America. Paolo, top pro points Latin America. Li Shi Tian, top pro points for Asia Pacific. Same for Nam Sung Wook. Yuya Watanabe, top pro points Japan. And Yuki Ichikawa, top pro points Japan.
Sweet. The next four are Jared Betcher, because he was the rookie of the year. He gets that. William Jensen, top pro points at large bid. Josh Utter-Layton, top pro points at large bid. Yep. And Tom Martell, top pro points at large bid. And rounding out the last four, Ryan, who are they?
Oh, man. This fucking, first of all, I gotta say, these funny ass highlights added to these photos by Watsi is fucking hilarious. Like the light, like outline around the players.
Yeah, the ones that don't knock have them look so much better.
Knock that shit off. Look at Paul Rietzel, for Christ's sakes. What did you guys do to him? Sam Black, this looks like a fucking photo from 1993, like eighth grade class. What is with the backgrounds? This is so awful. Why is Watsi like editing, like photoshopping these this way? I don't get it.
You got me.
Jacob Wilson's got like a bright light shining behind him. Jacob Wilson, top pro points at large. Sam Black, top pro points. Paul Rietzel, at large. Kentaro
Yamamoto,
yes. Top pro points at large. So, yeah. that's our World Cup, or Magic World Championship competitors that they announced. So, sweet.
Yep, that's it. I enjoy watching that tournament, so that should be a lot of fun to watch. I'm going to pull for Willie Jensen.
Yeah, why not?
I'm just gonna pull for him now. You got a pick? Who are you gonna pull for? I mean,
I don't know. Pull for you. Let's Yuki wait till the event comes up and we can maybe do a draft or something. With only 16 players, that should be more fun.
It's gonna be hard to draft it. I mean, there's actually 24 players, by the way.
Oh, 20, whatever, 24. Before going on to day three, did you want to go over the metagame for day two?
Did you have metagame numbers on that?
Yeah, I do.
Go for it.
Link was kind of buried. So the top six decks didn't change. We went over that earlier. Outside of blue white, claimed the fifth spot over Burn. Black Devotion was still 17% of the field, day two for standard. Keep in mind, we're down to 228 players now. So, the numbers did drop off a bit. White Black Mid is down from 39 decks to 31, still 14% of the field. So, yeah, Mono Blue still in third, Esper in fourth. I mean, the numbers are all about the same, I mean, as far as representation goes. So,
does that means to me that it's a balanced format, because you don't see one of them going from like 30% to 70%, you know? Everything kind of moved on based on basically play skill?
That's a pretty good assessment. I would agree with that, yeah. Yeah, pretty balanced.
So that's good.
I mean, so no big shakeup there on, for standard on day two though, so. Yep. A lot of tension, lots of tension before we get to, day three with the Tommy. I do want to say some cool stories though for day two, that everyone that needed to top 75 to stay platinum did so.
Yeah.
Including Sifka and Ifro, which is huge. I mean, staying on the train, I don't know. I mean, it means it's obviously like just a world of difference between gold and platinum as far as Pro Tour status goes.
Yeah, it's really weird with Ifro too, because at the beginning of the year, he was just kicking ass. There was no way.
Fire.
He just wasn't going to fall off. There was
no way.
He
didn't make GP appearances, really.
Mm.
It didn't seem like he was killing it at the GPs. All the people that needed to top 16 to get platinum or stay platinum did so. This is insane. Like these two stories about going platinum or staying platinum are just nuts. Like everyone that needed to top 16, that, you know how hard it, well, I gotta get top 16 to fucking get platinum. Like good luck. Like, but everyone did so, including, Ichi, Huza, and Flock. All needed to top 16. That's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I thought that was just a super cool story that came out of day two. It was like, you know, congrats to those guys. Like, making platinum is huge. And that they pulled that out is just was just nuts to me. So.
Yep. That is actually very crazy that so many players pulled that out of their ass.
Yeah. And ones we want to see around too, like Martin Huza, you know, Flock, Sifka, Ifro. These are all big names. So.
Yep. So we also got our Nationals captains named, and there's no point in going over all of these. The United States is going to be Owen Turtenwald, because I have to represent our Scandinavian friends. Sweden will be Joel Larson.
No surprise. You don't
no surprise, say. But worth saying. Netherlands, Frank Karsten. That's good to see. Last year's champs, they were the French, and Jeremy Dazzani is going to lead them.
Not Levy, really?
Well, player of the year, Jeremy Dazzani.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he gets that, I'm sorry. Willie Edel was Brazil. It's worth mentioning. And there was a bunch of other people that you've heard of and some that you've never heard of who went ahead and knocked this out. I do think it's funny that Northern Ireland and Ireland have two completely different teams. When of Great Britain as a whole is not... how do I say this nicely?
Well, it's political. Everybody. It's political. We don't
it is. It is politics. That, but it's all of Great Britain is not exactly a magic force. You know what I mean?
And I mean, Scotland doesn't exactly get along with England per se. So.
They do not. None of these people really get along. But, I mean, Wales got their own. It just is kind of weird.
Yeah, it's weird. There's not a Scottish team.
There's Scotland.
Is there?
Yeah. Scotland's head is led by Bradley Barclay.
Sweet.
Dmitry Budikov, he got the Russian Federation.
Nice.
Russia can come together. Britain cannot.
Yeah.
Think about that, Britain. Just think about that. I'm just saying. Give peace a chance. I want to hear Ryan try to pronounce the Belarus guy.
I don't even have the list pulled up.
Okay. It's Evgeny Zakharakov.
We can have Hakon correct us on that.
Yeah, that's a good name. Yeah. Pate 3.
Yes, the big one.
This is the big one. This is where, you know, the notes get intense from my end at least. And this is where, you know, we're going to get into the brass tacks of what actually happened.
Yeah. So our format for the top 8 standard. Pretty sweet.
Yep.
So I was pumped, to say the least.
Well, I mean, why not? Our top 8 consisted of players, and I will go over their profile to start with, and you can tell me what they were playing, Ryan. Okay. We have Ivan Flock. We'll start with him. This is Ivan Flock's first ever Pro Tour top 8.
Yeah, in 12 years of pro play.
Yeah, he was...
Over 30 Pro Tours.
He was the new player. Who, you know, now that Reed Duke finally got his top 8, he was the new best player without a top 8. Now that monkey's off of his back and he crushed it. I mean, he had a good day. What was he on?
He was on the, I'm going to troll you all day blue white control deck.
Yep.
Featuring no detention spheres. And I mean, do you want to go over these decks now or?
Sure. Let's absolutely go over them.
This deck annoyed me, but his brilliance in play and his patience made it. He took a deck I would hate to play and hate watching and just did, I mean, it was amazing. No win conditions main board outside of 3 Jace Architectathoth, so I'll start there. Well, and he's got 2 Mutavolt in his land. So we got 3 Jace, we got 1 Elixir for those infinite, you know, revelation loots. 4 Verdicts, 3 Planar Cleansings, that's right, 3 Planar Cleansings, fuck Detention Spheres. 3 Divination, cause I wanna get through my deck. I'm pretty sure that should say 4, but it says 3. 2 Mutavolts, that's another win con for him. 4 Sphinxes, 4 Dissolve, 4 Azorius Charm, 4 Quicken, which was, let me tell you, this card was fucking insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
It did work this week. And like I said,
at least 6 times on camera did he go Quicken Supreme Verdict.
Yeah, and like I said before, it's a sad state of Magic when Quicken's good.
Well, it says draw a card, and just all you want to do is dig through your deck, land an elixir, and sphinx.
Just saying.
I think it's a good card. I don't know if that's a sad state of standard when a good card is good. It's a good card.
No, that card is not good, though. When it first came out, the first time that it was printed, like, everybody just disregarded it because it just wasn't good.
Sure. I mean, people played Thought Scour, and I think this is better than that, but whatever.
Yeah, okay, I'll agree with that completely.
let's see, two Last Breath. And two Syncopate. So, his sideboard. Let's get some more win cons, shall we? He's got two Last Breath here in the board. One Jace Memory Adept. That's a win con. Two Gainsay. Four Nyx Fleece Ram. That's definitely a win con. I'll quote the meme we got this week. Brah. Do you even beat down? With the picture of the sheep, that was fucking awesome. I will say, we did at one point on the day, I won't say when, the 5-10 sheep. Oh my god. One Deicide, two Archangel Athune, there's some win con, one Elspeth Sun's Champion, cause that's a win con, and two Dispels.
Okay, just a few other little, things about Ivan Flock's history. He has 167 career lifetime points. That's what he had. He has more now.
He's Hall of Fame eligible now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he had over 150 before, so he was already eligible.
Is it 150 or 200 now?
150, but you have to have 10 years into the game as well. He has 26 Pro Tours, one Pro Tour Top 8 now, four Grand Prix Top 8s. He was a Team World Champion in 2010 with Team Lost in the Woods. Or, I'm sorry, Team Slovakia. The team that he played with this week was Lost in the Woods, and Grand Prix Lisbon champion in 2012. So, that's interesting. The next player.
I do want to say I love, in his profile, what deck he played and why is he played the deck that Stanislav Sivka basically came up with, handed him. So, yeah, not a bad choice.
This.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a control player, Stanislav is one of the few guys that you could just hand you a deck and you could feel pretty good that it's gonna, you know, form well.
Well, his team, Lost in the Woods, this is a team. Stanislav Sivka, Ivan Flock, Martin Yuza, Frank Karsten, Matej Zadelkaj, Robert Jurkovic, Robin Dolar, yeah. Adam Koska, Nikola Volcha, and Peter Schork.
A great fucking team.
Wow.
Yeah.
Our next player, though, we're going to go to is Jackson Cunningham in his first ever, I repeat, first ever
Pro Tour. How fucking sweet is that, dude?
Yeah, this is Jackson Cunningham, not Jeff Cunningham, who you might have heard of. That's his brother, who has been on the Pro Tour multiple times. His limited record was 4-2. He was 8-2. This is funny. Previous Magic accomplishment. Beat Kai Buddha on Magic Online once.
Yeah. He snuck into the top 8 as our 7th seed. Just barely. He was one of the guys that Pat Cox, that we talked about earlier, could have just shook hands with. And
yeah, that was actually the last game that he did that. So.
Yeah, and this guy had some bad luck. I think he had really bad luck all through the top 8, actually, and just was able to pull some things out.
So what was he playing?
Jackson Cunningham was on a deck that surprised me as far as making the top 8 goes, and had a good record with this list, with only 2 losses. He was green-white aggro. Fucking sweet. First of all, his sideboard. I'll touch on his sideboard first because this is my, you know me, this is, Angelo, you'll say this is my kind of sideboard right away. It's got only 5 choices of cards.
Yeah, there was no thinking there.
Yeah. 4 Setessan. It's a sideboard that knows what he wants to do and what matchups he's identified as weak spots, and he wants to address, attack them full on. I think it's a strategy that's very good for maybe not every deck, but for Selesnya, I think it's pretty good. Identify your few weaknesses, and he does that here. 4 Skylashers. Okay, mono blue, that's a problem. 4 of those. 4 Unflinching Courage. 2 Ajani's Presence, 4 Setessan Tactics, and 1 Ajani's Steadfast.
Yeah. You know what, though? To everybody out there who plays Constructed, I do want to point out that this was his first ever, not just Pro Tour, but Constructed Tournament.
Tournament.
He'd never been to an FNM in Constructed.
No, are you sure? I thought I heard that it was like his third or something.
Well, it says here that, you know, his brother trained him, and this is his first ever Pro Tour and Constructed Tournament.
Well, how do you make the Pro Tour?
A sealed qualifier.
Okay, so he's obviously played in a tournament before.
Yeah, just not a Constructed one. He's only played in like three tournaments.
Okay, yeah, yeah. He's only played in like, this guy makes the Pro Tour with like two, three tournaments.
I mean, he just has to look at it like it's just, this is his right. It's supposed to be this way.
It's insane. And when they did a deck tech with him, and he seemed very knowledgeable about what he wanted to do and how he felt like, he drafted red both times because he thought red was the best color and that's what he forced. Like he said, good luck there. It's what he knew. Like,
his brother, he does have a good teacher in his brother. I mean, Jeff Cunningham is, you know, one of Canada's best all time players.
Yeah. This is amazing. This is an amazing story. This is the sweet story that you want to hear out of the Pro Tour. This is the cool story. This is the, what was the shop owner's name from a few Pro Tours back that the top aided?
Balls, I don't remember.
Shares a name with another pro.
Balls, I don't remember.
Who's the pro? David Ochoa.
Oh, okay.
Okay. No. Know, we've had these stories and top eights as of late, you know, whether Melissa DeTora.
Melissa DeTora had years of grinding. I mean, this dude just picked up cards and was like,
yeah, that's true. But I mean, we hope to hear a cool story, and I was glad that we got one of those cool stories, like,
Yeah, but I mean, this is very discouraging to us longtime grinders.
Right?
Where he's just like, yeah, I'm just
kind of disheartening. But last Pro Tour, we had like Andreas Mengucci.
Yep.
This time we got Jackson. So that's cool. So his list, we touched on the sideboard, pretty straightforward. His lands, 4 Mana Confluence, 4 Temple Garden, 8 Plains, 8 Forests. And I think that hurt him. He struggled all day with the different colors of mana. And I think having the Temple of Plenty would have suited him, and he just did not want any come into play tapped lands. He did not want one.
No.
I think the Temple would have been worth it.
I mean, realistically.
Look at the top eight. We'll get into what happened. And if mana wasn't an issue, things could have turned up very, very differently.
Could have game one. Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, the deck had, I mean, at 24 land, it should not have had the mana issues. He had bad luck, like I said, even just to make it into the top eight. Like I felt so bad for the guy several times on camera. It was just like his land, like just would not come together. I was almost thinking in my head, like, God, this guy needs to do something. Like he needs to like, his land must be all clumped together or something. Like it was just weird. His deck though, 3 Selesnya Charms, 4 Advent of the Worms. Advent of the Worm was fucking all over the place, this Pro Tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking sweet. Craig Lesko ran a 4 of them. Yeah, his creatures, 4 Experiment Ones, 2 Sunblade Elf, 3 Soldier of the Pantheon. That should be a 4 of, it's the best one drop. 4 Voice of Resurgence, 4 Fleecemane Lions, 3 the Big Boy Smiter, and 3 Boon Satyrs.
Seems like a good package.
Yeah, yeah, that's what she said. 3 Ajani Caller of the Pride to steal games from out of nowhere. Really good. That Ajani was nuts this weekend, man. Ajani Caller of the Pride, still my favorite of the Ajanis we have in Standard right now. Sad to see him go. Glad he put his mark on.
Oh, he left a mark. He left a hell of a mark.
Yep.
There's going to be people who are going to be walking around with that mark across their face for a while.
Yeah. Ajani was nuts.
I'm going to jump this swing for 18. What? Yep. I thought I won this game.
Yeah, I mean, he won a game with like a, he had a huge, I want to say, Soldier of the Pantheon. He was able to like play an Ajani, or minus an Ajani to give it flying and double strike, then play another Ajani and plus it. So it swung for like 12 in the air. Pretty nuts.
Yeah, the nicest one I saw him pull off on the weekend was, I want to say this happened on Saturday, where he jumped his creature.
That had a Boon Satyr on it.
Once no blocks were declared, he Blood Rushed. Nope, this was another deck I'm thinking
yeah,
of.
Yeah, that's Pat Cox's deck.
Yeah.
You're thinking of. Yeah, he got away with some sick shit. Boros Charm, Gorklan.
Yeah, it was like, holy fuck.
No. Jackson's sweetest move with Ajani on the weekend, I think at one point he had a...
He flashed it to Boon Satyr.
A Boon Satyr on an Advent of the Worm and swung for like 18 trample flying.
Yeah, that was sick.
Pretty nuts, so.
Sick.
So that was Jackson's deck.
Okay, so our next player is going to be Pierre Christophe Mondon from Columbus, Ohio. Because yeah, that name Ohio. Sounds like Columbus, Ohio.
Right? He was in France? No. Pierre Mondon. He's a Midwestern boy.
Yep. He has three limited GP top Grand Prix top eights under his belt. This year, for some reason.
He's won a GP too, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. And he has a 67 win percentage this season. And he gave the best answer on what would winning the Pro Tour mean to you? 40K. That's as honest as you can fucking get. Like, you know, you can come up with all the bullshit you want and you're just like,
that's dude. Work. That's a working class answer from a working class dude.
He was like, man, that's 40K.
That's what's up. That's what's up. Yeah.
What was Pierre on?
A fucking sweet list. Now there were a couple of these, you know, this was a top 10 deck as far as representation at the PT went. And this was, I guess we kind of said there was no creativity at the top, you know, tables or whatever. And I guess from maybe from the players, we expect to see it. But there, this deck, we did see it last week at the SCG Open. I think it got second. Jund Planeswalkers.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty fucking sweet. So this, you know, an innovative new kind of build that people, you know, the numbers on this aren't set. So we did see different versions of this here. So this is what Pierre went with. 9 Planeswalkers. So 3 Vraska the Unseen, 3 Xenagos the Reveler, 3 Chandra Pyromaster. Garrick, we got no time or space for you, homie. Move on. Vraska, I think it for 5 mana does what Garrick's gonna come down and do at 7 mana anyways. He's gonna come down and blow up a non-land permanent, and that's exactly what Vraska does already. So, whatever. I don't see
Vraska's a negative though. I do. Garrick's gonna see play, man.
And he did. I'm not saying it's, I just, at 7 mana, Garrick, maybe after rotation. Vraska, I think, is just fine. 4 Coursers, 4 Sylvans, 3 Elvish Mystics, let's get our mana on. 11 Sorceries, that's a lot of sorceries. This deck is, tapping out on its own turn. 4 Read the Bones, 2 Rakdos Returns. We saw, you know, some people running 1, some people running 2. The card is insane. I got like 12 of these, I don't know what they're worth, but maybe I should get rid of them before rotation.
What are they again?
Rakdos's Return?
Yeah, get rid of them. Drop all of them.
Very good. I don't know why I have so many. 3 Mizzium Mortars and 2 Dreadbore. Yeah. His instance, he's got 6 of them, 2 Putrefy, 1 Hero's Downfall, just 1, 2 Golgari Charm, and 1 Abrupt Decay. So, yeah, I felt his number. I would have liked to see a second Abrupt Decay. I mean, maybe even 1 Putrefy, 2 Abrupt Decay, something like that. But like I said, this is something that's not all ironed out here. His lands, everything you'd expect, except for the 1 Mutavolt he's running. That's kind of unexpected, but.
Yeah, cool. With that mana base, stretching it a little bit.
Just, you're pushing it. I would have, rather have seen like even Urborg probably would have suited this deck better.
I think so too.
But, okay.
I would like Urborg in there just to smooth out some of the other things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got you're asking for double black on stuff like, Hero's Downfall. Yeah, I could see that. Let's see, his sideboard, 1 Rakdos Return, there's the third one there, 1 Abrupt Decay, 4 Magma Spray, that very good card for this meta, 1 Mizzium Mortars, 2 Slaughter Games, 2 Duress, 1 Golgari Charm, 1 Pithing Needle, 2 Thoughtseize. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I would tweak the numbers on this, but this deck was sick. This was a lot of fun to watch. It just seemed to get I thought Marshall had a good point in talking about this deck is that none of the Planeswalker's ultimate seemed to are overwhelming or wow anybody. I mean, Xenagos, if he does go off, can be impressive, I suppose, but not in this deck.
It can be really impressive. Like we saw it with Manguchi.
Not in this deck though. I mean, not in this deck.
It's, but the thing is the utility of the Planeswalkers themselves.
Yeah. It's just the incremental value you get from them over the game was just impressive.
Yep, not enough Hero's Downfalls floating around in this tournament.
Yeah, well, Mono Black was the most represented deck, so that's not true, but.
Yeah, but apparently, you know, we had a couple Planeswalkers
He didn't see enough Hero's Downfalls.
Yeah.
But again, with 9 Planeswalkers, Jeez, that's a lot. It's a lot to answer, man.
Yeah, I mean, you did see a lot of Heroes Downfall. You saw a lot of Dreadbores being played. Like, it, people were actually ready for him. It just, nine of them's a lot. You're absolutely right.
It's a lot to answer. I mean, yeah, the deck is sweet. I don't think this is, I think we'll see in the next few weeks, this is a deck to watch and see where the pros kind of take some of these numbers. So.
Yeah, I like the other list a little better, but we'll get into that in a couple.
Yeah, weeks. I am with you on that as well.
So our fourth player we're going to go over is Owen Turtenwald, who has a career lifetime points total of 258.
Can I just say real quick too, Owen Turtenwald snuck in as the 8th seed.
Yes.
And he couldn't have been luckier. We're talking a super tight race for the 8th spot. I mean, the 8th place could have gone to Jeremy Dazani, Ben Friedman, Martin Huza, Timothy Simino, John Finkel, any number of those guys could have got 8.
But going into the last round, realistically, especially once the handshake was not made, there was 3 players vying for 2 spots, and it was Cunningham, Turtenwald, and Dazani. Well,
Cunningham came in at 7th.
Yeah,
a lot of players were tied.
But the thing is, Jackson Cunningham finished with the same amount of points as Turtenwald. Those 3 players, Dazani, Turtenwald, and Cunningham, they all finished with the same amount of points, but they clearly were going to have the best breakers. The question was
Simino, Huza, and Friedman.
But
any number of them. I mean, it all came down to breakers for the 8th seed.
Going into the last round, their breakers were considerably worse, and you knew it wasn't going to be them.
Well, and given his performance on standard, Turtenwald had a miracle. I mean, he went 1-2 in the second draft, and he only managed to rack up 24 points in the standard portion, which, I mean, I guess that's, you know, that's all right. I mean, he went 8-2 in standard. That's not bad, but.
That's pretty good. I mean, you're only so many players. You know, 2 usually.
Either way, point is that the 8th, he just came in, and the competition for that slot was, oh man, it was tense. When his name was called, I don't know if you saw, he was actually jumping.
Really nice to see.
He was jumping up and down on his way into the line.
Yep.
It was unreal.
But this is a player who has been to 24 different pro tours. Jeez. This is now his second top 8. He has 15 Grand Prix top 8s.
Yeah.
He was 5th at Pro Tour Gatecrash. Champion of Grand Prix Washington, D.C. in 2013. Champion of Grand Prix Albuquerque in 2013. This is going to be the U.S.'s captain for the World Magic Cup. I mean, accomplished player, Team Pantheon. What was he on?
He was on White Black Midrange that the Pantheon came up with. Pack Rat Thoughts, he's as good. I do want to say, though, he also, what card had the greatest impact on the weekend? Caves of Koilos. I think he's completely right there. The Painlands, obviously, I mean, he said it when we went over our set review that they would have the biggest impact on standards. So no big surprise there that, Caves of Koilos was kind of the card that Caves of Koilos enables this deck so much more than it did what was in the past. I mean, allows you to do so much more along with, Urborg. And then you got, all the Painlands are really good. I think to just allow for a lot more decks to be played, viably, this one included. So
yeah, Caves of Koilos and Llanowar Wastes are the two that I thought had the most impact.
Yeah, definitely on the weekend were huge. His list, pretty stock, black, white, midrange, except in weeks past where we've seen the drop off on Blood Barons to the board, they've added 3 to the main deck, 3 Blood Barons, 3 Lifebane Zombie, 4 Pack Rat, 3 Desecration Demons, and 1 Obzadok Ghost Council, 2 Elspeth Sun's Champions, 4 Thoughtseize, 3 Underworld Connections, 2 Banishing Light. So far, so good. His instance, 1 ultimate price, 2 Devour Flesh, 3 Bioblight, 3 Heroes Downfall. I don't know how someone talked Owen Turtenwald into running less than 4 Devour Flesh, but just the 2.
They must have stuck in a room with a bunch of good players.
They had an intervention. They must have had an intervention because I swear, like, that's Owen Turtenwald's card. His sideboard, the Pantheon came up with here. 1 Underworld Connection, the 4th one there in the board. 1 Sin Collector. I don't know why not 2 of those, but okay, I'm not a pro. 3 Doomblade, 3 Duress, 2 Drown in Sorrow, 2 Deicide, 1 Erebos, 2 Last Breath.
No Liliana, which really surprised me. That was probably the biggest surprise for me about this deck, was no Liliana in the board. We saw with the mono black decks on the weekend, they were running Erebos Liliana Split in the board. Kind of expected the same thing here. Didn't happen.
Yeah, I am actually kind of shocked by that, too. I mean, I've said it before, like, Lily's good. She's not great.
She's but still, against, but in the matchup, since she's good, she is great.
Yeah, against control, she is very solid. And I would think coming into a Pro Tour where we all know the pros love to play control, you would just put a couple in your sideboard just to hedge your bets.
Against Flock's deck, she's insane.
Yes, she is. Yeah. Get rid of those cards. Get rid of those cards. Get rid of those cards. That's just all you do. The whole game, just get rid of those
very
cards.
Very good. Yeah, so sweet list, though. Really keep in mind with this black-white mid-range, this is really tuned for this metagame. If we see, like the pros were saying, I mean, we heard it out of their mouths themselves that this tournament, like, everyone, and as far as all the pro teams were concerned, they all converged on Blood Baron being the card, whether you had to play it or beat it. And so I think that in coming weeks, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see that move back towards the sideboard. Who knows if these monsters and these Jund decks kind of pick up a bit. I don't think it'll be as good. So, yeah, just me.
So Pat Cox.
Yes.
This gentleman, top eighted Pro Tour Nagoya in 2011. He has 5 Grand Prix top eights. He is also an SCG Invitational Champion. Made his Pro Tour debut in Berlin in 2008. So this is a player, you know, we've seen around for a while.
Yeah, another Channel Fireball guy. They just owned this top eight.
You know what? They own them all. As soon as somebody gets good enough, they just swipe them up. Like, don't be shocked if you see Yuki Ichikawa all of a sudden wearing a Channel Fireball shirt. Right. But so what was Pat Cox?
I mean, we had 4 Fireball guys in the top eight. Yuchi, I don't know. I would probably bet to see him with Mint Card, MTG Mint Card. So, he kind of can do his own thing. He's the biggest streamer of Magic in the world. So
yeah, I was going to put that into his profile.
He gets more viewers streaming Magic than any of the North American guys. So, but Pat Cox was on the Brave Naya deck that's kind of gone to the wayside in recent months in Standard. I mean, we've seen it. We've talked about it. We weren't that impressed with it, but he had a decent run with it here. 26 creatures, 4 Soldier of the Pantheon, 4 Dryad Militant, 4 Voice of Resurgence, 4 Fleece Mane Lion, 2 Precinct Captain, that's bad in this deck, 4 Boros Reckoner, and 4 Gore Clan Rampager. Precinct Captain, I would run the Fabled Hero over that all day, every day. The heroic double strike dude that gets counters. Because, why? Because this deck runs 4 Brave the Elements, 4 Selesnya Charms, and a Boros Charm to boot. Yeah, pretty good. The Boros Charm, usually in these Brave Nihilists, we have seen like 4 of those. But he's running 3 Ajani Call or the Prides. I think he had to make room for those. Yeah, we usually see 4 of those, because it combos so well with Gore Clan Rampager. I mean, you Blood Rush and give a dude double strike. Very, very good. So, I mean, this deck can get massive swings out of nowhere. You just go, I mean, Fleece Mane Lion, Gore Clan it. Geez, that's 14 out of nowhere. It's very, very powerful.
It looks like I'm going to lose and now I just won.
Yeah, it's a deck that, though, if you play against it enough, it's not going to catch you off guard. It's one of those decks where you'll make the mistake once of attacking with your dudes, knowing that, oh, well, they don't have lethal on board, they attack back, and I can race them, and then they ding you for, you know, 18 out of nowhere. You know, that happens, but I think once it happens to you, it doesn't happen again, and I don't know. I think that loses some of its cutesiness. So that's another reason that he probably cut down on the Boros Charm. I personally would have just gone all out on the Boros Charm. It's just fucking 4 damage to the face is really good. And where are the rest of the Boros Charms? In his board, 3 of them. 1 Xenagos the Reveler in the board, 2 Banisher Priests in the board, a Back to Nature, an Ajani Steadfast. The obligatory 1 Ajani Steadfast sideboard Pro Tour. these green-white guys. Advent of the Worm, 2 of them, 2 Mizzium Mortars, and 3 Setessan Tactics, another sideboard all-star this weekend. Guard's good.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. So our next player, Yuki Ichikawa, as Ryan said earlier and ruined my thunder on that. Damn you. He is the top streamer in the world. He has a grand total of 4 pro tours. He's been to 2 top 8s. Yeah. This is his 2nd top 8 in a row. A journey into Nyx, he top 4'd. The dude is just a very, very solid player. The only criticism I might have of him is his communication skills during play is slightly off, but it's a language barrier thing. I mean,
I actually thought, as far as the language barrier was concerned, that his communication skills were pretty good. He used English cards.
Yes.
For starters, which he didn't have to do. In fact, there were times quarterfinals, his opponent picked up a card and read it, would not have been able to do that had he brought the Japanese cards.
No, that's absolutely true.
Communicated with a lot of hand gestures, and I think on camera, that's hard to, you can't really hear the communication, so it might seem like it, but I thought he was very good at signaling as far as like what was going on. For example, I mean, clearly, maybe the best play of the tournament in the quarterfinals.
We'll talk about that. But, you know, I've said it in the past, like, I don't really care for the hand gestures because sometimes people will just be, you know, using their hands to think, you know what I mean? And the next thing you know, somebody can take that as a pass turn. And
I thought he was pretty good.
But he did
though.
Pretty good at it. I mean, like I said, if I had to nitpick, that would be the one thing that I have. But I'm sure as he goes to more of these, he's going to pick up the simple words like go and things like that. So it'll become so much easier for him.
Yeah.
And he's
he actually used main phase 1. I heard him using English, so.
Yeah, he doesn't do it well. When they put him on camera for like deck techs and stuff, he had to have a translator.
Well, yeah.
He'll get better at it. And,
more in-depth questions.
Well, yeah. What was he on? And his list was sweet, Ryan.
Oh, this was the 2nd Jund Walker's list in the top 8. This list was fucking sweet. And with more, the Planeswalkers in his build, I guess, are a bit more, proactive. They do a lot more. So he's got 4 Xenagos all out there and 4 Nyssas. And Nyssa was a fucking house.
Yeah, she did good things.
4/4 lands. Dude. Oh man, this is good. I'm glad I opened another one this last Friday.
Yeah, when you see Nyssa and Xenagos drop on the same turn and there's only 4 lands in play, it kind of makes you think.
Yeah. So 2 Chandras and only 1 Vraska.
Okay.
So pretty sweet there. 11 Planeswalkers total in this guy's build.
Yeah.
Let's see. 1 Golgari Charm, 1 Abrupt Decay, 1 Putrefy, and 2 Ultimate Price. Okay. 4 Elvish Mystic, 4 Caryatid, 4 Coursers, no big surprise there. 2 Thoughtseize, 3 Mortars, 2 Dreadbore, 1 Rakdos Return. And the, Greedy 2 Mutavolt.
Greedy.
Are his lands of note.
So, it is greedy.
Yeah, not a fan of that, but cool.
Okay, so we're ready to move on to the next player.
Oh,
or do we have sideboard to talk about?
Sideboard here.
Yeah.
2 Thoughtseize, Arrakdos Return, 2 Doomblade, a Mortars, 2 Magma Spray, 2 Ooze, a Golgari Charm, and the fucking all-out 4 Mistcutter Hydras.
Sweet. Our next player, you've probably heard of him. His name is William Huey Jensen. This is his 5th Pro Tour top 8. He's been a Masters champion. He has 16 Grand Prix top 8s. 3 of them he won. And he was a Hall of Famer in the class of 2013, and he's part of Channel Fireball.
Panic. He was also another one of my picks.
He was.
In the fantasy draft that top 8ed.
Ryan crushed me. this just can be put out there right now. Ryan killed me in the fantasy draft.
We'll get to that.
Jensen on?
The Pantheon, the black-white mid-range, the same deck that we just...
Is there any difference with his and Owen's?
No.
No. Okay, so we can move on. I like hearing that. And our last player, Matt Sperling, quite possibly the best Grand Prix player of this whole entire year. He has an 82.9% win rate at Grand Prix.
Well, he hasn't top aided like Jensen and them have this year, though.
But he's an 82.9%.
That's win rate. So he gets to like the top
60
tables and then like gets a third loss or something.
Yep. He has a previous Grand Prix champion. He is 1 Pro Tour top 16 and a Pro Tour 30 top 32. This is his first Pro Tour top 8. his deck was cool.
It was cool, but it was not, again, not what I think is the optimal build of this list. And I think had he gone with the Eidolons over four young Peasies, he'd have been better off.
I can think of one game he probably still would have lost, but okay.
Well, yeah.
So what was he on?
So red, white, burn, obviously. Young Peasy. One Eidolon and four Chandra's Bird. Let's see. Four Shock, three Skullcrack, four Lightnings, four Boros Charm, four Stoke the Flames, four War Leader's Helix, and four Searing Blood. Stoke the Flames, yeah, you're hoping to cast off those young Pyromancer tokens, but I'm telling you, every time this deck was on camera, every time this deck was on camera, and it was on a lot, not just with Spurling, this was a deck that, you know, obviously it was the fifth most represented deck there, day one, and the sixth most on day two, but Young Peasy just never was not once impressive, except when someone stole it and beat him down with it. It was not, the card is good in vintage. It's good in vintage. I don't think it's good outside of vintage. Like,
I didn't get to see it a bunch on camera because again, drugs. But
in what miracle world are you running away with the game with a young Pyromancer? Like, it just doesn't happen. Like,
you just burn stuff away and you get in there, man.
It just doesn't happen though. It doesn't happen like you'd want it to. Like, it's,
I don't know. His record,
I was never impressed.
8-1-1.
It was on camera a lot.
Well, he obviously wasn't on camera because his record of 8-1-1 says that it did.
Well, yeah, burn. I mean, yeah, you win a lot of incidental games with Chandra's Phoenix and just all the burn that's in the deck. Like, young Pyromancer on a whole, though, is very underwhelming.
If it creates you a couple blockers, just to play devil's advocate, if it creates you a couple blockers and gives you a couple turns to draw a Stoke the Flames, that might be worth
it. But if you're blocking, this deck is losing anyways.
Yeah, but there's a lot of times, and again, this is, you know, me going back to when I would play mono red, where a lot of times you get somebody to three life and then the opponent begins to take over and you can no longer attack. And if you can get a couple blockers
I'll save your turn.
I mean, it might just
buy you some time to hit some burn, sure, but I'll quote Will with the philosophy of fire is you want every card. You want seven cards that are going to deal at least three damage, and over a game, like, you can't guarantee that young Pyromancer is going to do a damn thing like you can with the Eidolon. The Eidolon's guaranteed damage. They have to take damage to remove it from the game. Like, it's just what happens.
Yeah, but it helps you as well.
Eidolon is just always, it's guaranteed damage. Every card in this deck should be damaged. Chandra's Phoenix it's pretty much guaranteed damage, and it's recurable because even if they get rid of it, it's annoying as shit. It's gotta be exiled. Four Mutavolt, that's pretty much guaranteed to get in some damage. His sideboard, one Skullcrack, three Chained, two Chandras, one Eidolon, two Glares, one Wear Tear, one Banishing Light, and four Satyr Fire Dancer. Now, Satyr Fire Dancer's fucking nuts.
Yep.
That's probably what
he was
in it. I
saw that pull some crazy shit.
Oh my, yeah, did the, whole like 4-for-1 on spell or something. I don't know what was cast where he had a Fire Dancer on board, but it was pretty insane, so. Yeah, that card was pretty cool.
It was like, kill that, kill you.
Yeah, it's really good, against, the green-white aggro and the, I don't run any in my sideboard of burn in this meta, for sure. If you're expecting a lot of mono red, creature-based mono red, which we saw a lot of, even mono blue, just a lot of green, white, a lot of decks, Satyr Fire Dancer's, you know, pretty good against, so.
Yeah.
And we saw that. That was evidenced on camera this weekend, so. Yeah.
It absolutely was. So those were our players.
Yay.
Those were our top 8 decks. Our bracket breaks down as such. Pat Cox, Owen Turtenwald. Game 1. Realistically, Ryan, did you get to watch this? Because to me, it looked like Pat Cox was one land short of winning that game.
Yeah, it's just...
And then the Blood Baron came down from Owen, and after a couple swings, it just closed the window.
Owen played masterfully.
He did.
In the second game.
Yes, I was going to go to the second
game. He just kind of ran away with it. Yeah.
So in game one, I mean, it was just that way. Game two, Owen, like Ryan said, played masterfully. He used his resources very early and aggressively. Removal. He even used a 1/1 pack rat to trade with a creature, knowing that a Blood Baron was and Elspeth was following. He was just going to get to that point where he had a Blood Baron, he had an Elspeth, and he was just going to win from there.
Yeah, I think he was at 4 land with another one in hand when he made that block, so he knew he could drop the Baron. He had 2 more turns to draw land for the Elspeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It masterfully played, and he ended up actually dropping a second Elspeth throughout that game, and yeah, that was GG.
Yep.
GG.
And I like that matchup for Owen Turtenwald. I think that Pat Cox would have been better suited playing against Mono Black.
Yeah.
I think the Black-White mid is just better against the, you know, those aggro decks, whereas the straight-up Mono Black tends to struggle just keeping up with one-for-one removal. This has some solid options and things that gain you back life, like Obsidot's huge.
Yeah. Well, just, I mean, look, most of us out there, I mean, because it was like a 2/1 that was attacking, would not have had the stones to say, fuck it with my pack rat. They'd just be like, I'm not giving up a pack rat for that. But it was the right play.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's played against Brave Naya enough to know that the 2 damage is huge, because usually in that build, usually against that deck, they cobble out some way to swing out of nowhere from anywhere from 16 to 18. It's really at 16 that you gotta worry. So he was really did a good job of like managing his life, I thought, cause he would have gone, I believe, from 18 to 16 had he taken that hit. And next turn, you know, you're vulnerable to like Gore Clan, Boros Charm, you know, any number of things on there. Plus that soldier has protection from Blood Baron. So had he dropped his life total.
The Blood Baron has protection from the soldier, doesn't it?
The soldier's protection from multicolored.
Yeah, but the.
So it attacks and the Blood Baron can't block it.
Right, okay.
And if he goes, if he attacks next turn, if Owen doesn't make that block and next turn he goes.
It wasn't the soldier though that was on the board. It was the Greed-White one. The Greed-White hybrid 2/1 that.
Oh, was it a mill? I thought it was a soldier that he
used. No, it was a Dryad
Belt. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, most of us wouldn't have made that play, and it was like, yeah, it was the right play. So the next game was, Ivan Flock versus Matt Sperling. And.
A game that Flock should not have won.
No. So game one, Sperling deals small amounts of damage, holds up a skull crack for a rev. Flock continues. He does get it. But Flock gets to draw his cards, obviously, and he continues to rev, gaining life twice. But Sperling keeps Flock's life total low, and it really looked like Matt Sperling was going to pull this off.
Eventually, I don't know how.
I know, but eventually Flock does rip an elixir off of a Jace activation while at 5 life. Cracks the elixir, goes to 9 because he used a pain land. Sperling casts a Helix, redirecting it to Jace. Another Jace then hits the board. Flock revs for 10, and the lights literally went out on Matt Sperling on that game at that point. Literally,
the lights went out. I thought it was funny, game two, because game two was even worse for Sperling.
It was terrible. Flock, double ram, double rev.
First of all, can we just say how good was Nick Sleece Ram to Ivan? His Flock was good to Flock this weekend.
Dude, yeah, I mean, them sheep were giving it, were doing
he
big things for
drew
him.
His sheep every time.
Yep.
In every matchup he needed a sheep, it was in his opening hand.
Yep. And he only ran what, 2?
He runs 4.
Oh, he does run 4, okay. But he always had 2.
And he always was able to get at least 2 of them, and yeah, he got 2 of them out real early against Matt Sperling, and that was it.
Yeah, he got the 2 Rams out. He used some Azorius Charms to slow Sperling down.
How did he take his young Pyromance Master? Oh, he Jace Ultimated.
He Jace Ultimated. So he got a Pyromancer.
And at this point, Sperling is just kind of laughing and letting him go through the motions.
You gotta give Sperling so much credit for how he took that.
Like, oh, yeah, because he laughing, sat there through
just
multiple.
Just having a good time. He's like, go ahead, man.
He sat through multiple Sphinx's Revelations, through multiple. I mean, he was well out of the life range that Sperling's deck could. If Sperling casted every play, like, burn spell in his deck, it wouldn't have been enough. Like,
at one point, Sperling had 40 life, and Flock had 34. And there was no shot for Sperling to win. At one point, Marshall actually said that his only out was punching a judge. And if Marshall says that, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, it was brutal. It was brutal. So Flock with a deck that just demonstrating his patience, his masterful play. Like, there was no way going into this matchup I'd have thought Sperling would have gone any worse than 2-0.
Yep.
I was like, because this isn't the blue-white control with detention sphere and some of the other things that can fight off these early aggressive decks. I mean, he's really, like, kind of, he's just all in. I mean, no win cons, really. I mean, just
can't, none.
Really, really surprising and too bad for Sperling. I mean, call it bad beats or whatever, but that's magic and it happens. And a matchup that he should have gone 2-0, he lost 2-0.
Yeah. I will say that, you know, through watching Vintage, through watching so many things, I have never seen a young Pyromaster or Pyromancer create so many tokens in one turn.
for the opposing player.
Yes.
I mean, it got stolen.
The opposing player.
Yeah.
But he was just like, Sphinx's Rev, quicken, Azorius Charm, yeah. Divination, just, I'm just going to make everything. And it was just like, oh my God.
Pretty insane. So.
Yeah. So our next match, Yuki Ichikawa versus Jackson Cunningham. And the dream dies here. Yuki does not move on. The power of a Johnny's minus three ability really shined through in game one.
The play of the Pro Tour, if you go back and watch.
Hold on, Ryan, still in game one. At one point, and this was a very good play by Cunningham, and this needs to be pointed out. Mortars was sitting in Ichikawa's hand, and the dude is stone. Like, you're not going to get a read off him. And he decides to tick up his Smiter with a Johnny rather than put him in the air. And that just put him out of Mizzium Mortar's range. And that is actually what won Cunningham that game. Like, hands down. And then game two, I mean, I usually go over what actually happened, but Ryan's going to want to do it, so.
Well, it's a game Cunningham should have won. Yuki demonstrated, I mean, if you watch any match of the Pro Tour, anybody listening, like, there's one match you watch, quarterfinals, Ichikawa Cunningham, the game two, he is staring down a 5/5 Advent token and a 2/2 elemental token.
Mm-hmm.
That was off of Voice of Resurgence. He has got a 2/2 scavenging ooze. Jackson goes to attack. Ichi has, I want to say, 6 life.
Yeah, something like that.
So he's facing 7. He pumps the scavenging ooze twice. Was it an elemental token or a Loxodon Smiter?
That was, I believe, an elemental token. Yeah, you know what? It was an elemental token because this play killed the elemental token.
No. I know the 2/2 was the elemental token off the voice, but what was the other creature? Was it a Loxodon?
No, it was a 5/5.
No, it couldn't have been because of what Ichi did. It had to be a Smiter. So he makes it a 4/4 to offer the trade with the Loxodon Smiter, yeah. And he's just going to take 2 from the elemental. What he does, and he has the mana, keep in mind, to pump his ooze. At this point, he could have pumped it to a 6/6. He stopped at 4, made the block, offered the trade. At this point, it was an elemental token. It was an elemental token. He made it a 5/5 and offered up the trade. At which point, Cunningham goes Selesnya Charm to exile the scavenging ooze. In response to the Selesnya Charm, Yuki, and you knew he had this play in mind, you knew he had it coming, you knew he put his opponent on Selesnya Charm because he hid the card from the announcers, no one knew he had it in hand, and he slams the Golgari Charm.
Yep.
Drops his ooze down to a 4/4, Selesnya Charm, all that resolves, then he continues to pump it 2 more times.
Pump the scavenging ooze so it would kill the...
Makes the ooze a 6/6, kills the worm. He pumped it twice more, whatever. He makes it a 5/5, kills the 4/4 worm, and then the damage obviously stayed on, or the neg 1, so the elemental token after combat died as well.
Yes, and then he had a huge ooze sitting there to kill.
So from that point out, he beat down with
ooze and immutable. Ooze and immutable closed it out in 3 turns.
It was insane. It was one of those top 8 moments that'll always, like, be talked about. And it'll definitely go down as one of, like, the top plays of all time. Like,
I don't know about plays of all time, but it was clearly the play of the tournament.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think, though, as far as Pro Tours go, it's in the top 20, 25 of, like, those plays.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Okay.
Everyone will remember. It's a highlight reel.
Okay.
It was insane. It took a lot of foresight. First of all, putting your opponent on Silesnia Charm, get out of here, like... It was nuts. I mean, yeah, he is a player. I'm telling you, we will see in the future a lot more of.
This is a future Hall of Famer. This is a future Hall of Famer. He's gonna play forever, and just be good.
Yeah, very very good.
Game three, however, Jackson just got out with way too many threats too early. Ichi could not keep up with it, and it was actually a very disappointing game three after the way game two played out. But I can agree with you though about, you know, when you said top 25 plays, but when you say one of the greatest ever, I think like top three or four. And I'm like, no, it's not there.
No, I mean, this play maybe even top 10. I don't know. Pretty good.
Maybe.
I do want to say though, like, yeah, this match was like the game three was like the only time in the tournament Cunningham's deck like curved out. I think so.
Yeah. Yep. So the next game was William Huey Jensen versus Pierre Mondon from Columbus. This doesn't sound great. Okay, so Jensen goes turn two, rat. That gets Golgari Charmed away. And then Xenagos gets played by Mondon, applying pressure. That eventually gets banished, but the 2-2's still there. But Mondon follows that with the Chandra and then a Rakdos return. And after that, Chandra just kind of finished the game off. So Mondon's up 1-0. Game two was a long game. Mondon and Jensen go back and forth. But Jensen lost a lot of life to Underworld Connections. Finally, one turn before Mondon was going to die, he flips his top card, and it is Rakdos's return to deal the final two damage.
Yeah, that was a pretty sick top deck.
It was a nice top deck. I was in there going, okay, what could he get? Rakdos Charm, Rakdos Return, and yeah, that was it. And
I want to say, though, it was unfortunate for Jensen to lose, but I think, you know, we've been on the discussion of rules lawyering. I think that in the top eight of a Pro Tour, this is one instance where you should be, and Jensen was not, and I thought that Mondon got away with just a blatant thing that he should not have. When he went to scry and then revealed the card to Jensen.
Yeah.
This was game two.
Yeah, he skipped. He shortcut.
And then he went to shortcut to Chandra's zero ability to exile a card, and he was going to exile the Mutavolt. And then after talking to the judge, he didn't tell the judge that. He just simply said, oh, my intention was to scry. I just showed the card, you know, giving Jensen information, which is a game rules violation.
Yeah.
And, but he doesn't say, he doesn't explain how he was going to try to shortcut or anything like that, and instead scries it to the bottom, just getting away with what he should have had to, I don't know how they could have resolved that, but I felt like at that point he had already said to his opponent that he was planning on exiling that card.
Yeah, they should have just forced him to exile it.
Yeah, they should have just forced him to exile it and not allow him to use.
Yeah, he really got away with one there because like
he essentially used Chandra Zero twice, which I thought was blatant cheating because instead of exiling the Mutavolt, he scryed it to the bottom when he had already made clear to Huey that he was going to exile it, and then he got to exile another card off the top.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, it was a land, but that drew him, it also got him one card closer to the fucking Rakdos' return that won him the game. I thought Jensen got cheated game two, and I was fucking livid pissed.
Yeah, I know at one point the judges actually called Jensen out on something, and it was so obvious, and he's like, what are you talking about? I was doing this. He's like, oh, okay. Like, the judge came up to him and was like, wait.
Yeah, and he made him look stupid.
Yeah. The look on Huey's face there was actually pretty priceless.
It was pretty priceless, because he was already, I think, pissed off about, you just let this guy get away with blatantly cheating me in a top eight of a Pro Tour, and you're going to question how I'm tapping my lands right now.
Yeah.
Leave me alone, please.
Yeah, the look on his face.
In fact, there were several instances of judge douchebaggery during the top eight. In fact, even Jackson Cunningham in one game I thought was funny because apparently the judge had been giving him shit about playing faster earlier on.
I'll be real honest, watching Jackson Cunningham play, and I get this is his first constructed tournament, first Pro Tour.
It was excruciating.
It was painful to watch.
Yeah, it was, sometimes it was excruciating. It's like, dude, you do not not, you have one possible option here. You are playing green, white aggro. You do not have this many lines.
Yeah. When he was playing against Mondon, we'll talk about it in a minute.
Yeah. But I thought it was funny that at one point, like, he's thinking during his turn and he looks to the judge and he goes, I can have the time to think at this, during the top eight, right?
Yeah, and the judge actually had to tell him, yes, but you still have to play at A.
Yeah, I thought that was fun. I thought that was like a nice little shot at the judges being douchebags.
Yeah, so with that said, our semifinalist breakdown, Owen Turtenwald versus Ivan Flock, Jackson Cunningham versus Pierre Mondon. So here's the news. Owen Turtenwald getting to this round jumped him over Reed Duke in the player of the year category. And it was funny because coming in, everyone thought, well, it's either Jeremy Dazani or Reed Duke's going to get player of the year. No ifs, ands, or buts. That's going to be 1-2.
Yeah, but once Duke dropped day one, there was no way Owen could have chased down Dazani. It was impossible. He couldn't
because Dazani made day two. But it was weird. It was like, how, you know, now is Owen actually going to be the United States captain? Because if he top eights, if he top fours, he gets it. And this top four got him there. However, when it's said and done, Jeremy Dazani is the 2014 player of the year. Congrats to him. And Jared Betcher, as I mentioned earlier, he received the award for 2014 rookie of the year. Now on to the semis. Flock versus Turtenwald, game one. This is exactly how it went. Counter, counter, bounce, counter, elixir, verdict, bounce, cleansing, rev. Owen picked up his cards. Flock 1-0.
Yeah, pretty dominant.
I mean, that was the game. Like, no joke. Game two, Flock played a bunch of lands, and Owen actually got a connections to stick. And then he stuck a rat, and then he won the game.
Yep.
1-1. So we're going into the decisive third. Owen almost got him before the rev train got started. But with this deck, once the rev train gets started, the key word in that last sentence was almost. Flock wins 2-1. He got the rev train going, and there just was no stopping. It was like infinite revs, just rev, and Owen just, no. I'm not going on any further. So then we have Cunningham versus Mondon. And let me tell you, this match, because between Jackson's slow play and Mondon constantly pulling a judge to the side to ask for a ruling, which I get you're allowed to do all this stuff, but Jesus fuck, is it just painful to watch on camera?
And what seemed obvious.
Yeah, I mean, this should have been a quick game, and it took so fucking long. But game one, Jackson applied pressure and kept it going, and that was even through a Veraska. This game took longer than it should have, but Jackson Cunningham wins 2-1. Game two, Cunningham had a much slower start. Mondon removed threat after threat, and Cunningham kind of stalled on three lands. And the planeswalkers begun to do what planeswalkers do.
Wait, did you just say planeswhacker?
Yeah, I did for a second here, but
oh my god, I'm gonna call them planeswhackers from now on.
I was gonna edit that, but now I guess I can't. So the planeswalkers did what they do. Chandra was exceptionally impressive in this game. He got to hit two mortars off the top of it with the Chandra ability. One of them was overloaded. And Jackson drew his fourth land just a tad too late. At that point, when he finally drew the fourth land, it was just like way too late in the game. So Mondon, Jackson 1-1. Game three was the one that fucking really just like pissed me off. Mondon pulled a judge aside, I think three times. Cunningham, I swear to God, his hand was over his temple in between every play for at least 2 minutes. Very confusing back and forth game to watch. Eventually Jackson got a Johnny out and was able to go over the top to the win. Just go watch it. There was multiple judge calls. It was painful to watch. Do you have anything to add to that?
No.
No. Okay. I didn't think you would, but I figured I'd at least bring it up. And then the finals, Ivan Flock, Jackson Cunningham. I immediately just put Ivan Flock as the favorite in this. I actually looked at my wife and was like, so in about an hour, Ivan Flock will win the first three matches. Three games, and this will be over.
Did you really expect? As far, I mean, the story, the first Pro Tour, his like third tournament ever, making all the way to the finals of the Pro Tour, even I knew that this story was not going to end with the first time PT or winning a Pro Tour.
But I legitimately thought Ivan Flock was going to sweep this.
Yeah, I would quit. If a guy at his first PT wins, I'll quit this game, like, because then it's just like, okay, this is just, anybody can win.
I mean, in game one, Jackson got stalled at 2 lands while Ivan Flock had 8. And Ivan Flock's running a Revelation deck. And I don't know if you know this, but if the Revelation deck has 8 lands and you have 2, you don't win.
No.
This is a fact of life. You just don't win that game. So Flock wins 1-0. Game 2, Flock legitimately just got flooded. And he said he wanted to play a land every turn, but I don't think he wanted that many lands.
Yeah, you do. You want to land every turn with an elixir deck.
Yeah, but he had nothing but. Like, he never saw a rev, never saw an elixir.
Oh, yeah.
Never saw
yeah.
an counter. It just was like, you know, he'd play a quicken or a divination and he'd get him more lands. Like, it was too much lands. But a Johnny giving a soldier flying and double strike won the game for Cunningham, tying everything up 1-1.
Yep.
Game 3.
Yeah, this is the one that I will say, if I could say anything to Jackson, I would say, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
Keeping that opening hand. Or keep, I don't know if he kept his opening, but whatever hand he kept.
He did, I mean, he got to a pretty decent point. He ultimated in a Johnny. Ivan Flock looked at it, went, okay. And then just, you know, it was like.
Planar cleansing.
Supreme verdict?
Was it verdict or cleansing? Verdict. I don't know.
Then Flock got an Elspeth going and there was flying sheep. And it just
no. The flying sheep happened here too.
He got an Elspeth ultimated. Yeah. So it gave all creatures +2/+2 and flying. He had flying sheep to win this game too.
Yeah.
Game 4, I legitimately missed because I was arguing with the MTGO administrators. So do you know what happened in game 4 for it to go to 2-2? How did Jackson win, Ryan?
I do not recall.
Damn. Game 5. Jackson got it to 2-2. Game 5, Flock won. And, brah. It was sheep.
Yeah.
It was big sheep.
The sheep on the bleat down.
It was the, Ben Stark infinite combo.
Yeah. I mean, so he won this game with 2 5-10 sheep.
Yep. And how does he do that, you ask? Well, that was, would be with an angel.
Yep.
His angel triggers twice every single time because he had 2 sheep.
Yep.
2 sheep, angel, ends the game, ends the tournament. Congratulations, Ivan Flock. Congratulations, Jackson Cunningham. I mean, at times it was painful to watch, but the story, you had to root for it. He made it to a Pro Tour Finals in his first constructed tournament ever. His third total tournament ever. I'm half tempted to quit Magic from that. Half tempted. I mean, the truth is, I'll fake quit it. I will never actually quit it.
It's one of those stories, I mean, I don't think we'll ever hear, I don't know if you've ever heard anything even remotely like this.
Well, I mean, I might have, but it was so long ago that it was a lot easier to get to a Pro Tour because there wasn't as many players.
Yeah.
You know, like, not in the modern era of Magic at all. Like, this
Pro Tours used to be around, like, less than 300 players, too.
Oh, yeah, I remember being, like, 100, and ESPN covered them.
356 is quite a lot. You know,
it is. So, congratulations, guys. We did have 5 cards that stood out in this. And number 1 was Nissa World Waker. It powered Yuki Ichikawa. His deck just so far.
Well, not only that, but we mentioned earlier that Mono Green Devotion was one of the top 10 decks played there.
Yep.
And she's really, really good. Aside from the paid lands, I called Nissa as the card to have the biggest impact on Standard. I think she might, like.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the fact that Detention Sphere and Planar Cleansing does not kill the 4/4s.
Yep.
Like, those are just 2 thoughts that completely slipped my mind. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, Verdict gets him, but
Verdict
probably aren't using her in that matchup.
Detention Sphere and Planar Cleansing both say, you know, can't target. They both say non-land permanent.
Non-land permanence, yeah. Abrupt Decay can't hit the tokens or can't hit the lands either, so. Yep.
So, I mean, those are all pretty good. Insult Artifact was number 4 during the draft portion. Dark Steel Citadel or Ornithopter with an Insult Artifact.
So somebody did something cool with Insult Artifact. I hate when they do this.
Patrick Dickman managed to go 3-0 with this in day 2 with a 6 creature deck, but it had 3 Insult Artifacts.
Yeah, I don't, so one or two, I just don't like when this is what they give as like the top 5 cards. So someone did something neat with Insult Artifact, like, oh my god.
It's a good draft card. It really is. If you can get a couple Insult Artifacts and you have the blue red artifact deck, like that deck's good.
I wish they did a top 5 draft and a top 5 standard
card. I'll agree with that.
This is weird.
Goblin Rabble Master, well, it was good in constructed and in limited, so I think this is just a good card.
It says in round 12, Wrath Levy's Goblin Rabble Master with a Legion Loyalist was able to attack for over 20 points of damage through Deepman's Board of Tokens, I believe. So, yeah, the team Revolution was on this deck, and one of Ellis group that LSV, you know, some of the CFE guys were running this Rabble Master red deck featuring four of these guys. And they seem to think it was really, really good. I see is Dies to Doomblade on it. Yeah. I just don't see how this card ever gets out of control, but apparently, I mean, if it sits uncontested.
You only need a couple turns.
Yeah.
I mean, cause like you can swing in the Sylvan Caratids with it and you don't care. They're going to block it, sure, but it's not going to die. You can swing in any of the mana dorks.
And they've already taken so much incidental damage by you already at that point, so.
Yeah, yeah. I've played a little bit with it in limited. I have not played with it in constructed. And honestly, you know, I've gotten it out of hand a couple times in limited, but that's expected.
Yeah.
You know, number two was Johnny Caller of the Pride. And like we said, it really left its mark.
Yeah, no big surprise. It's the second Pro Tour in a row where a white Plagueswalker has been, you know, pretty fucking insane.
Yeah, it says this weekend, black decks slow down and control decks stop playing Detention Sphere. And that makes it a perfect time for a Johnny to go crazy.
Yeah.
And the number one card was Quicken because, Ivan Flock used Quicken to just, I mean, if you had five mana and you had creatures, you knew it was going to be Quicken Supreme Verdict.
Oh yeah. In the semis when he went Quicken Verdict after Owen got his,
Elspeth. How do you kill an Obsidot? This is how. Yeah. It's like, Yeah. It just, Owen used the Elspeth's, ultimate. And it was just like Quicken Supreme Verdict. Fuck.
Yep.
You know, Quicken Planar Cleansing. it was absolutely absurd the things that Quicken enabled his deck specifically to do. I still am going to argue it's not a great card, but you know, it is what it is.
And this deck though, I thought their analysis of it was spot on that all he's doing is digging through. Digging, landing more and more lands. Like LSV was great in his analysis on this deck about, you know, how the ultimate point is to be able to land every turn. Giant Sphinx's Revelations over and over again. I mean, he's got like no win conditions. So even Flock said, in the interview that game one that he would more or less hope that his opponent scooped. And if they didn't scoop, they would scoop to the Jace ultimate.
Yeah, those are your options.
So I thought that was funny. Like, you're either going to scoop or eventually I'm going to ultimate a Jace in game one.
Yeah, or you're going to be milled because we went through 60 turns.
Yeah, and what he'll do is he'll just
and I'm play going a land to be every refilling turn, it with get elixir, an elixir. You're not.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, every time he elixirs, it just gets better and better because the deck just gets thinner and thinner. Less lands, just each revelation, just better and better, and you can't beat it, so.
Yeah, after like two elixirs and you're on rev like six or seven, it's rev to rev to rev to rev to rev to rev to rev. And you can just literally almost go infinite on revelations.
Marshall or LSV at one point in the top eight covers said that Flock in one match on the weekend had, revved eight times.
That's absurd.
Eight times in
How
one
do you
game.
Let somebody do it eight times. Like after about the fourth, I'm just picking up my cards.
Yeah, I scoop because usually the first, it's not the first rev that gets you, it's the second and thirds. And I usually scoop after the third. If the third is for 5+ cards.
Yeah.
I'm likely scooping. So, because even if you have underworld connections can, you know, it just can't keep up with. Yeah.
It can help you keep Revelation. Up with the first one easily. It can help you keep up with the second one with a little bit of struggle. The third one.
Yeah. When they're hitting 5, 7 and in Flock's case, you know, revving for like anywhere from 10 to 15. Mm-hmm. Pretty nuts.
So, SCG had some things going on. That'll be all of our Pro Tour coverage stuff for this week. 'Cause we're 2 hours in easy. So SCG had some shit going on, but I say fuck SCG this week.
Nothing exciting over at SCG unless you look, it's Dallas. What do you think won in Dallas? Take a wild guess.
I don't even know. I know. Was it the
Cowboys? Aggro is all they play in Dallas. I don't think there's a play set of Supreme Verdicts within the greater, like, Dallas, you know, the city proper.
Metro area.
Yeah. We got mono, it's just all mono blue devotion. Three of the top four are mono blues. Jund Monsters, hey, Red Ryan. White Burned, Jund Walkers, Ryan. The deck that top aided, but nothing. Yeah.
I legitimately don't care.
If anybody does though, if you like mono blue, there is some new stuff to look at there.
Look, if you care about SCG's coverage, go look it up.
Yeah, there you go.
Aside from that, dude, aside from spending your entire weekend watching the Pro Tour, what have you been up to?
Playing some Magic, working on still playing the Bant, working on that. I may play it at game day. I don't know. We'll see how Friday goes with it. I ran well with it this last Friday, so, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah, but I did well with it this last Friday, which was a modern Friday, so there weren't many people playing standard, and all the best players in the shop were mostly on modern, so I don't, you know how to hold up against some better competition or something, but I'm definitely getting better with the decks, so I'm gonna stick at it.
I'm glad to hear it. Actually, I am.
Playing control, man. What does the world come to? Yep.
I like it. Cool. I had an interesting weekend, man.
Well, what's that?
So Tuesday after we recorded, I got an excruciating toothache and I did not get to sleep until 4 a.m. and I had to be at work at 5. But about, I don't know, I had to get up for work at 5 and be at work at 6. About a quarter of the way through the day, the toothache was gone. So I was like, all right, I slept. It went away. Fine. I'm good the rest of the week. Thursday night comes around. I'm still feeling pretty good. And about 11 o'clock, the toothache comes back. Right as I'm laying down for bed, and I got no sleep. So in the morning, I call the dentist's office, and I'm like, I need to set up an appointment. Please call me back. This is my number, blah, 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 blah. I explained the whole situation. I was like, I'm in so much pain. I get a call from them before they even open, and they're like, he has a hole. And mind you, this was 8:30, and I had to drive 25 minutes to get there.
Uh-huh.
They call me, and they go, we have a hole at 9:30. We can fit you in. So I dropped everything I was doing at work. Was like, I'm done for the day. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Went to the dentist's office. They yanked two teeth out of me. And I talked to the dentist. I'm going to start going back every 2 weeks for the next couple months. For anybody who knows me in real life, my teeth are fucked up. Years in
upon they just they said fuck a root canal, fuck all that. They just yanked it.
Yeah, I was in that type of pain. They needed to just yank it. Well, here's the deal, Ryan. When I was young, I got into a fight. I was like 16, 17 years old. I had no health care or anything. And I got burnt. And it cracked almost all of my teeth. And because of the no health care at the time, all I could do was get the emergency removal that the emergency room said was absolutely necessary. So I had one tooth taken out, and they left the rest of them cracked in there. And I had no dental coverage, and I'd call dentists, and they're like, yeah, to fix your teeth, you're looking at about $3,000. And I'm like, I can't afford that. I'm fucking, you know, 70 yeah. years old. And I never got a chance to really get them fixed. So over the years, all those cracks just led to cavities. And they got bad. I mean, my teeth, I have half teeth. I'm not going to lie. So what we're going to do, I set it up with this dentist. He's really reasonable on prices. Like, he ripped out two molars for $100. Dude, jeez. That is balls cheap. I know other dentists in here, I called them about getting a tooth taken out, and they're like $300, and they don't care what tooth it is. And it's like, $300 to take out one fucking tooth?
Jeez, I just spent $600 at the vet the other week for my dog's surgery to get one tooth removed.
Yeah, you feel me?
For a dog.
So this dude's like $100 for, you know, two molars, big teeth. And he shot me up with like seven fucking things of Novocaine, gave me a bunch of drugs. That's why I was on drugs all weekend. Painkillers and things like that. But what we're going to do is over the next couple months, I am going to get my top teeth completely fixed. They're probably going to end up being pretty much all fake, but they're at least going to be functioning teeth at this point. So that makes me very happy, but it needs to be done. And then next year we're going to work on the bottoms. So the toothache thing should be going away fairly, you know, within the next 2 years, thank God. Cause I've actually lived in pain for quite some time with these, and it's going to be good to have that done. But I also built a fucking deck for standard.
Oh, it's
future standard. It is future standard, mind you. But it is junk, and I really haven't gotten to grind any games yet with it. I'm still four cards away from my final list because as I was purchasing my cards, we had the PT spike on prices, and I am not paying what they want for a Caves of Koilos and for a fucking Llanowar Waste. Like, they want almost 8 tickets for a Llanowar Waste. And at the beginning of the week, okay, here's an example. I bought a Temple of Malady on Friday for $4.
Okay.
Sunday, I went to buy the fourth one. $9.
I'm glad I got all the fucking temples.
That was like the only, I needed to buy a third and fourth that I didn't have from drafting. And I was like, I'm not paying $9 for that. So I'm waiting for the Temple Malady to come back down to the 5 range. Yeah. Caves of Koilos went from a little over $1 to like 3 tickets. And Llanowar Wastes went from like 3 tickets to like 7. Over the weekend. So like, I'm waiting on 1 Caves, 2 Llanowar Wastes, and a Temple of Malady, and my deck is done until Cons comes out. And, also to go along with that, what I was doing in the fourth game of the finals, arguing with, Wizards customer support, is I'm starting a clan for this show on MTGO.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it has to be approved by an administrator at Wizards or whatever. And at first, I wasn't even allowed to click on the start the new clan button. So I was kind of like, you know, well, why can't I click on this? I was kind of arguing with them about that. And eventually they got it to where they're like, okay, go ahead, form your clan. And they let me, and I was able to, you know, actually tap on the button and I formed the clan. Now I'm waiting on administrative approval.
This is ridiculous. How come, why would WotC care about what groups people want to start to play with their friends? Like, get out of here.
I have no clue. I think it's because of the whole clans with tournaments thing now. They're a little pickier on who gets clans. But if that's the case, so many clans before that are still there, they should reevaluate.
Yeah, that's fucking
We're going to get it. Like, I mean, by the end of the week, there's going to be a Pidims clan on MTGO. So just look on the Facebook page for the announcement, and then I will make the announcement next week on the show because it's going to happen.
You were talking about buying cards. Speaking of buying cards, your boy got a playset of Scuttling Doom Engines, and I'm disappointed that it made zero appearances at the Pro Tour.
Give it time.
I don't think it's going to see play.
Give it time.
I got a play set in case I'm wrong.
Dude, look, right now, it's not time yet. I'm just being serious.
I don't know if a 6-mana creature, 6/6, that does nothing when it enters the battlefield will have a time.
It's going to have a time, and here's when the time is going to be. Once rotation happens, as we saw from PT, what was that, Journey?
Uh-huh.
Elspeth gets put into every deck.
Yeah.
And when Elspeth gets put into every deck, those cards move to sideboard. And they're going to be a sideboard card. They're not going to be a main board card.
We'll see. I bought it because it was a
good idea.
I bought it because it was your pick. We'll see if it's $13 well spent.
Look, you've doubted me in the past. Just take my word on this. It's going to see play. It's not tied yet. When Elspeth takes over the format even more, that's when you're going to start seeing people throwing them in their sideboards, and it's going to see play. But so that's been my weekend, though. I mean, and watching the show and shit. So that's good. You got any shout-outs, Ryan?
Shout-out Megan. Shout-out Chachi. Shout-out Posse. Shout out new members of the posse. We got a couple new ones. A surprise too, with a couple of our, new members are like, have like religious backgrounds or like have gone or like to like actual like religious education.
Which is why I've told you in the past that I don't talk religion on this show.
Well, no, we don't. We don't, but as much as we curse and swear and say fuck and as high as I am 90% of the time we're doing this.
and I say the word cunt, you know, every couple
of times. I was surprised. So I wanted a special shout out to those guys because that's cool as fuck, man. Y'all are cool as shit. And, that's awesome. Open-minded enough to listen to us. So what up to them? Yeah, just, shout out to the posse in general because y'all been busy as fuck this week, man. I can't even keep up with it this week. Way too much going on there. I like the pack one, pick one shit. I think, is that Keener doing that shit?
Yeah.
Yeah, good shit. Good dick. Shout out to my fantasy draft pool for coming together at the Pro Tour to take down, Angelos.
What was the final score, by the way?
Okay. So if we add up all the points for all our players, my players came out 115 points. Your guys came out with my favorite number, 69.
I got that many points?
69, yep.
I'm shocked by that. I didn't think I got
standard,
that.
I got 73, you got 36. Draft, my players came through for 42, yours came through for 33. The average place in the tournament, my guys pulled through for 85th. In spite of two of my guys top eighting, Utter Layton and Yuya didn't really, Yuya came 110th and Raptor in 219th. That didn't help me. So my guys came out an average of 85 and yours came out average 189th place. Conley Woods was your best finish at 86. Duke was all the way down at 251st. Nakamura at 209th and Wafo with the Hall of Fame, curse 211th place. So yeah, pretty rough. I guess 85th is all right if you consider how many players were there. I was hoping to do a bit. Next time, here's what we have to do. We have to do obligatory Asian. And we each have to pick one of the Asian guys. And we have to do obligatory old guy. We have to do an obligatory, like, old guy Hall of Famer. Because John Finkel was my next pick.
Going to be the world, so we can't really do that there.
Yeah. But I did, John Finkel was my next pick, but it didn't get to be official because we just went with the floor.
Yeah.
He had a top 25 finish. Shout out to him. Shout out Melissa DeTora for another top 25 finish. The final standings, the top 30 was really, really impressive. So yeah, shout out to all those guys. For putting on a hell of a show this week.
Hey, I thought I had good picks. I mean, when the number one player in the world doesn't make it out of day one, when the best drafter in the world fucking punts, it's just
I'm glad that. I mean, Duke, though, that shouldn't have surprised you because his Pro Tour performances have always been like,
wow. Yeah, until like his last one.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe he turned a corner.
Never impressed. Paulo Vitor made another top 30 finish here on the comeback. Raf Levy.
Which qualified him for Worlds. Like that was all he wanted to do.
Yeah. And Raf Levy still on a tear. Another top 30 finish here. Yeah, Craig Wesco, they put on a hell of a show this weekend. So shout out to all the pro players that were there. So.
Yup.
Cool.
My shout outs.
Oh, hey, real quick. I do also want to shout out to Nissa Guy. I call him Nissa Guy because, after FNM this Friday, my prize packs, I'm opening them, right? They're all shitty. I mean, like the rares were crap and I'm down to, I got one pack left and the dude goes, this guy comes up to me. He's kind of douchey, you know, I'll just leave it at that. It's kind of like, not only does he play blue-white control, but he's a douche to, you know, on top of it. I have nothing against players that play blue-white control unless I just have problems with people that are just douchebags in real life. He's a douchebag. He comes up to me anyways and he's like, again, I'm like, oh, my packs are shit or whatever. And he says, oh, don't worry, there's a Nissa in this last one. I open it up and there's a Nissa in it. So shout out to that guy.
Cool. shout out to, Justin Monahan and Ruben. They're going to be a couple Magic Online playtest, buddies. They're going to help me get prepared.
Yeah, Ruben, that's my homeboy. Ruben, yeah. Shout out Ruben. Shout out Ruben.
Ruben's good peoples.
Yeah, hell yeah, he is.
Shout out to Wizards for giving us an awesome GP that is going to be coming next year. All of you people need to find a way here.
We're actually thinking of last time we wanted to take a train and we didn't have much time to plan for it. We're actually talking about the train trip there just because it would be fun. Me and Megan could take a train across the country.
That's not really across the country, but okay.
Whatever. Half the country, a quarter of the country. What the fuck ever. 7 hours.
shout out to William Schaefer who, he's a Wisconsinite who says that I have a fine taste in beer because I've been drinking all this lakefront brewery stuff.
Wisconsin's got the brew game on lock. They're doing it right there.
They do. They absolutely do. And, I also want to give a shout out to, John Laux. I don't know if he really listens to the show or not, but like, you know, he left Wizards, and he's back in the community again. And, you know, the big thing is like, he, now that he's back in the community.
Get him on this cast as a guest.
I would love to.
Send him a message.
I should. I don't know how much he can talk about though. That's the problem. Cause like he's not allowed to do anything with like, he's not allowed to play in tournaments for a while and all kinds of other shit. And
I don't know what happened. I heard that he may or may not have been working for WotC anymore. I didn't know.
He was working for WotC and he quit. because he just, it really sounds like he wasn't having fun there. Like he hated his job and he
I think I heard something earlier that there was some sort of letter.
Yeah, he wrote a blog about what happened and he can't go too into detail.
It sounded like he was kind of talking shit from what I heard about.
No,
like,
not really. I thought he actually
operate on the online side.
No, I mean, it definitely put a light into how the difference is. This is a huge corporation. You know, it's Hasbro, not Wizards. It's Hasbro, which has to go through Wizards as well, but. There's so many like checks and balances and, you know, where he's used to working with startups where he can just go, hey, this person's hey, I need to talk to this person, go over and talk to that person. He's like, I need to talk to this person and it's three floors down and all the way at the other end of the building. You know, so it created like where he felt like those people should be together more. And I don't know, it just seemed like he didn't have fun. Anyway, now that he is back in the community, like, he answers every tweet that is sent at him. He has been streaming every day. He has really, like, put himself back out there as part of the community and just wants to talk to anybody about this game. And
he'll get back on limited resources?
I think in due time he will. I think what's probably holding him back now is he's not allowed to talk about so much stuff.
I stopped listening when he left.
Really? See, honestly, Brian Wong, his overall knowledge... He's not as entertaining as John Lyles.
His
overall knowledge of limited magic is far superior to Marshall's or...
Which I like and I appreciate. Like, I feel like their set reviews are more like... Brian approaches the game from a more...
Analytical.
Yeah, and even more like what I would even call, like, as far as player type, like, more like a spike.
Yeah.
Laux was more like... I loved his approach to the game, how he thought about things, and how he was kind of like... He was great for finding out like the funky combos in draft that like no one notices. Like that guy would like be the first like.
Oh yeah, he was good for that. He was good. I mean, he was good for taking lands when he shouldn't. I mean, I'm not saying he was a bad drafter. He was a very good drafter. I just think that, I mean, for the spike in me, I like what Brian Wong has brought, do miss the entertaining aspects of John Lyles. But I'm glad that he's back in the community. I definitely needed to give him a shout out because what he's doing since he's come back, like, you know, big ups to you, dude. You very easily could have just, you know, introverted and said, you know, I don't want to talk to all these people, but he has not done that. And that's really cool. If you wanted to get a hold of me, said on Twitter, you get only Gonksuo. It's GANKSUOU. Same on MTGO, which you're probably going to need to get a hold of me by the end of the week because we're going to have a clan. you can also get a hold of me on the Facebook group. And if you needed to send me a long email, you can get a hold of me at pitimppodcast@gmail.com. You can also find this show over on on Brainstorm Brewery or on MTGcast, whichever one you want. And yeah, Ryan, how would people get a hold of you?
At Brother Ryan, at Brother Yan on Twitter. And, of course, Facebook. That's what's up. What up?
Well, how would they join the group, Ryan? If they said,
search for Pit Imps, excuse me, search for Pit Imps podcast, type that shit in your search bar and, ask to join the group. Real simple. We'll get you in. It's, recently been closed, just to kind of, so whatever you post there and stuff like that, don't worry about it showing up on like your page at all. Like everyone will see it and oh my God, you're a magic nerd. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah. Brews in house too.
Yeah. Keep your brews in house. We had someone express concern about that. We closed it up. This is what y'all wanted. So now we better see y'all joining. It's been growing. It's a great group. Much love. So that's where you can find me because that's literally the only thing I use Facebook for now. I like rarely post on Facebook. It's now more or less just what's the posse done in the last 3 hours.
So. Yeah, that's pretty much what I get on there for. I mean, during basketball season, I have a group for my basketball team that I coach, but that's just to tell parents when practice is and when games are, and that's it. Aside from that, Facebook is the Pit Imps posse. Like, that's just it. Okay, so next week, though, we have GP Portland, which I sadly had to pull out of. Thanks, Dave. GP Utrecht. And SCGQs, for those who don't watch college basketball, that's Syracuse, New York.
Yeah, shame on you if you didn't know that. Carmelo Anthony.
Donovan McNabb, if you watch football. I mean,
yeah.
Like, yeah, people and stuff.
I'm a huge Melo fan, though, because he played for the Nuggets and the Denver.
I hate Melo.
Well, the Nuggets are my team, so.
Yeah, and they got better when he left.
People actually were like, oh, the Nuggets are still in the NBA. All right.
Yeah, so. But until next week.
Hey, fuck yeah, Scandinavia.
We'll be back being normal fuck-offs again next week. Until then, have a good one and go fuck yourself.